Okay.
Something was
still. Hi, everybody. I don't. We're gavel-less tonight. That's a good thing, I guess. We want to try to keep this on time, and I do want to thank everyone for attending. Obviously, we're here tonight to talk about the draft 2018 PM 2.5 plan for the San Joaquin Valley. It's a nice opportunity tonight to get stakeholders, and thank you all for joining us tonight. Very much appreciate it. Also, around the table are representatives of not only the federal government, but our CARB board as well. I'm going to have some introductions in a moment, but of course, our local board. I want to say thank you to everyone for coming tonight. The goal, obviously, is to figure out how to get this plan on its way through the local board, to our board at the state level, and obviously on to the federal government for approval. The goal here is to try to move that along. As you know, last December we had a status plan on this. It was a little pause. There was a goal of getting people to talk, come together, try to look at some outstanding issues. Tonight's really a test of how we've done in some sense in terms of moving that forward. I would like to say also that one of the goals for tonight is to get some very good input from not only the advocates from industry, but our local board, and I do want to thank our local board members for being here as well. It's good that we're all sitting around together in some sense, and we ought to do this more often. We ought to try to figure a way to do that. So very happy. Hopefully the state board has set a good precedent about spending some time here, here in the Central Valley. Let me just kind of give you what I thought I'd like to get out of this meeting. Of course, I'd like to hear from fellow board members and our local board. But first and foremost, the obvious question is, when will we get a complete draft plan available for public comment and review? What elements still need and deserve focus? In other words, what have we looked at and what we can do a little better going forward? And probably the most important thing is the timeline for adoption of the plan by the district board and, of course, consideration by CARB at the state level. And with that, rather than keep going, I'm going to have everybody for a moment just introduce themselves. If we start with Tom. Well, actually, start with the local board. Let's be democratic tonight. Let's start with Tom Franz, and we'll just move across the room. But I do want to say something about introductions. We had a joint CARB meeting along with CTC, and I think the introduction took most of the meeting. So I want to avoid that. That type of thing. So let's do a very short introduction and let's go on, and we'll want to hear from the federal folks to give us a sense of what they're expecting. And then we're going to kind of kick it off with our local board and then, of course, our CARB members as well. Before that, I'd like to know if any of the CARB members would like to say anything. Alex, you want to say a few things? Okay, John. Okay, Tom.
Tom Franz from Shafter, California. Association of Irritated Residents, and on the steering committee for the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition.
Hi, my name is Cesar Aguirre. I'm a community organizer with the Central California Environmental Justice Network.
Good evening, Nayamin Martinez, director of the Central California Environmental Justice Network.
Hello all, Genevieve Gale, policy associate with the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition.
Sylvia Vanderspeck, chief of the Air Quality Planning Branch at the California Air Resources Board.
Michael Benjamin, Chief of the Air Quality Planning and Science Division at the California Air Resources Board.
Kirk Arperas, Deputy Executive Officer for, I'll shorten it, CARB.
Richard Corr, Executive Officer, CARB.
John Eisenhut, Board Member, CARB.
Alex Sheriffs, family physician in Fowler, California since 1983, did my residency here in Fresno. A little familiar with the air over the decades, serving on the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District Board and ARB, so if you see me stretching and being pulled apart, that's why.
Buddy, go ahead.
Buddy Mendes, I'm the chairman of the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, and I'm a Fresno County Board of Supervisors, so I'm welcoming you to Fresno since we're in Fresno, so welcome to Fresno.
Steve Worthley, Tulare County Board of Supervisors, and a member of the District Governing Board.
Monty Reyes, Council Member, City of Porterville, and also a member of the Governing Board.
Lloyd Pereira, a Merced County Supervisor, and a member of the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District Board.
Hello, good evening. Samir Sheikh, the Air Pollution Control Officer with the San Joaquin Valley Air District.
Shiraz Gill, Deputy Air Pollution Control Officer with the Air District.
Elizabeth Adams, I'm the Acting Air Director at USEPA Region 9.
Meredith Kirpius, I'm an Associate Director at USEPA Region 9.
Roger Isom, President and CEO of the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association and the Western Agricultural Processors Association.
John Larea with the California League of Food Producers. I'm the Director of Governmental Relations for that division, and we represent industrial food processors here in the Valley.
My name is Christine Zimmerman. I'm with Western States Petroleum Association. I'm a lifelong Kern County resident.
Okay, with this, I should say this is being webcast for some housekeeping. There are agendas at the back. If anybody needs and follows our path. And with that, let's start with, if we could, with federal EPA. And obviously a threshold question is, what is it going to take? Let's take it from there.
Excuse me, Elizabeth.
Yes, Kurt.
Translation services?
Yes, there is translation services are also being provided for those, and also webcast, I believe, as well. Correct. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Se están proveyendo servicios de interpretación en español.
Okay. Let's start with EPA.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for inviting us. And I've been asked to come and talk about what the Clean Air Act requirements are for an attainment plan and have a short presentation. But before we started, I just wanted to acknowledge the tremendous effort that many of you at the table here, both the district, CARB, and the community, have put into the development of this plan. I know that it's been underway for several years, so I just wanted to acknowledge all the great work that has been done to get us to this point. So the slides, I'm not sure. And I think there are handouts for that. So, okay. So the Clean Air Act envisions the state being the leader and having the responsibility for putting together attainment plans and state implementation plans. And this is because in local air quality districts and also states know best what the sources of pollution are. And so the Clean Air Act envisions them taking on the responsibility to do that. In California, California Air Resources Board and the local air districts work together, and they pull together the different components of what's required by the Clean Air Act and then submit a plan to EPA for the review. And once it's at EPA, often we work with the district and CARB while this is going on during the development of the plan. But once we have it, we have to go through the plan and determine whether it meets the Clean Air Act requirements, and that's part of what we do. So the attainment plan, there are lots of different state implementation plans, pieces of it. For the attainment plan, I used to call this the SIP flower. It doesn't really look like a flower. It looks more like a wheel. But there are many different components that go into an implementation plan. So they all get integrated, and I'm going to go to the next slide to kind of go through them. So first you have the emissions inventory, and this is really just categorizing and pulling together all the different types of emissions that are in the area. It can be mobile sources, point sources, the area sources as well. Then there's modeling that's done, and here, you know, CARB and the district have worked really hard to model attainment, so there's modeling to find out what the future year air quality will be. You have the suite of rules or federal measures, controls. So this will be federal measures, state measures, and local measures that help control the pollution and control emissions. And that becomes part of the control strategy. Then we have to look at it, and depending on the plan, there's reasonable available control measures or best available control measures you'll hear. But that's basically an analysis of all the control rules in the area to see if they're reasonable and are being implemented. Then reasonable further progress is another, so I have to do this part. Aha, nope, okay. Another component of a plan is to show that you're making reasonable further progress. And this really is just that areas must show progress towards the attainment goal, that there needs to be kind of a steady, there are milestones along the way to make sure that there's progress versus all of the emissions coming towards the end of the attainment period. And then contingency measures. So these are either new controls or it can be an enhancement to an existing rule. And it's meant to kick in if a milestone is not met, either if a reasonable further progress milestone isn't met or if attainment isn't met. And then lastly, there's motor vehicle emission budgets. This is a transportation network. It's making sure that all the emissions from transportation plans and all of that planning is integrated in the plan and that those emissions won't cause non-attainment. And now for the process, I'm going to turn it over to Meredith.
Okay, thank you. Will you click it one more?
Yep.
Thank you. Okay, so this particular slide shows, I guess I'll call it the journey, perhaps, that an attainment plan will take in going from where it is now that we've all been working on, a draft plan, until it becomes effective and then is implemented and becomes part of the state implementation plan. So you'll see up here some colors, so just to let you know that the green is any place that the district has a primary responsibility. Yellow is where the state does, and blue is EPA. So not only does it kind of explain the path, but also who's responsible at various parts of this particular path. So we're at that first box, the draft plan, and you can see the district and the state are both contributing to that draft plan. We at EPA are available to provide expertise as needed or requested, but really, as Elizabeth mentioned, this is really a state and a district effort. And then there's an arrow going to where it goes to the district's board for approval. And that arrow going to that next box is the one I think we're all in real anticipation for. So we're pretty excited for that next step. So there's public process that happens by the district prior to board adoption, district board adoption. Then it goes to the state. And ARB will have a separate public process. It's then considered by the ARB board for adoption. And I want to say that those first three boxes can be very dynamic. It can come out of one box and based on public process and comments, you know, go back to the beginning and be reconsidered and reconfigured. So, but then once it becomes adopted by the ARB board, then it's ready to come to EPA. As a submitted plan. At that point, there's a six-month window where EPA determines completeness, and after that, we get 12 months to review and take final action. During that 12-month period, we also will have our own public process at the time when we issue a proposal. And that proposal will include an explanation of the things that we plan to approve or disapprove and our rationale. And that's important because that's yet another opportunity for public comment. And then you really see in our interpretation of the Clean Air Act, where does everything kind of come together? So there's a number of different places where we all interface and where you have the opportunity to let us know what your thoughts are about the particular plan. Then when we take final action, it goes the parts that are approved goes into the state SIP. And then it becomes effective and implemented. So that's the overall plan, or journey, I guess, that an attainment plan will take. I think that's the part that we at EPA wanted to cover. And so then we can turn it back over to Senator Flores.
Thank you. Any questions on the EPA process from folks around the table? I have a small one, historical. Has anything ever been sent back from the EPA in terms of plans that anyone has sent?
Sent back. I don't know about sent back, but I mean, there are different, we can...
You mentioned the interaction. There's nodes where we can communicate with each other, but is there anything that EPA has ever seen that says completely unacceptable, go back CARB and local boards to fix this?
Not in my recollection. So once we try to work, issues out ahead of time, but often there are pieces of the plan, and we have different tools. So we can either approve We can approve portions of the plan. We can disapprove portions of the plan, and then it goes back on a timeline for people to address those disapproval issues, or we can conditionally approve, which means we have a commitment from the state or the local district that they'll do X within a certain amount of time. And so that's how we work with parts of plans that may not meet, you know, the Clean Air Act requirements once we receive them.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sure.
For an approved plan, what's the quickest turnaround the EPA has done, and what's been the longest?
Well, attainment plans, as you can see, have a lot of components to it, and that often takes a lot more time to evaluate. It always depends upon the plan as we get it, how complete it is, what the information is there. We have a whole process where we work with our attorneys and headquarters attorneys, so it often takes that year, and sometimes longer. But other plans that are sent to us, or measures, control measures that the state wants to incorporate into the SIP, we can often turn those around far quicker.
But nothing prevents a district or the state from doing what's in the plan, getting the ball rolling.
Correct.
Any other questions? Okay. Let's go to the local board, if we could. And Samir, I don't know how you want to handle that portion of it.
So we're going to have Shiraz kick off the presentation.
Awesome.
And before we do that, we'd be remiss to not talk about the hard work that CARB has done on the plan, that our staff has done on the plan. I think, most importantly, the public comments. After a couple of years of having a number of meetings, a number of opportunities for public engagement, really appreciate the comments that have come in and the comments that are going to be coming in as a part of this meeting. It's going to be great to actually have that conversation. I wanted to thank the CARB board members for being here as well, here locally. Dr. Sheriffs, of course, you're already here, but Mr. Eisenhut, traveling down here from the north part of the valley, as well as our board members, the four board members that are here for being here. It really just shows how important we take this PM planning process. So I want to thank all of you for being here, and all the public members that are here in the evening as another one of these meetings happens on this plan. And it's going to be, hopefully, based on the attendance that I see here tonight, going to be a very good conversation. So with that, Shiraz, if you could just walk us through the presentation, then I'll take it back up at the end.
Great. Thank you so much, Samir. And thank you for everyone for being here today. I want to start off the presentation by just recognizing how difficult it is to demonstrate attainment for specifically PM 2.5 emissions here in the San Joaquin Valley. The San Joaquin Valley really does face some very difficult challenges just based on where we are, based on our meteorology, our topography. I mean, we're surrounded by three mountains. We have very extreme temperatures in the summer and cold, really cold temperatures in the winter. That lead to multi-day events of stagnation periods with a lid on top. So it's ideal for pollution to get trapped in this environment. And it causes a lot of serious problems for the San Joaquin Valley and the residents here. So meeting these standards requires really a lot of reductions, more so than you would need in other regions. So over the last few years, we've been working very closely with the ARB staff and the stakeholders to get input is really to put a comprehensive suite of measures that includes both regulatory and incentive-based measures to reduce emissions that meet these very, very stringent federal standards. So this has been a collaborative effort. We've been working very closely with a lot of folks here, including CARB and EPA. So this plan includes both emissions that are directly under the control of the local air district, which are stationary and area measures, and then CARB measures, which include mobile source measures. Again, extensive public engagement process that we've been working on this for 3 years, so we'll see a lot of very familiar faces here. This ends up being the 10th public workshop that we're having here. And this plan really does rely on a heavy set of scientific data that was established a long time ago. The Central Regional Particulate Air Quality Study, the Central California Ozone Study, which spent a lot of investment, over $50 million spent to do and understand the specific PM2.5 emissions here in the San Joaquin Valley. And one thing to note is that the plan requires significant increase in funding for incentive measures, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. So the district and ARB over the last couple of decades have done a lot to reduce emissions here in the San Joaquin Valley. And we've adopted well over 600 rules, 643 to be exact. We got that number. And these are really the toughest that you'll find anywhere in the nation, both in regards to stationary sources and mobile sources. This includes all the way down to your very small operations, such as gas stations, coating operations, dry cleaners, to your large operations, your refineries, your power plants, your big factories. And over 80% reductions in stationary sources emissions have been achieved through these very stringent measures. Businesses in the valley have also spent over $40 billion to clean up this air. And many of these rules have been groundbreaking and serve as models for other regions. The district also has a very effective and robust incentive program that has invested over $2.1 billion in both public and private investment, reducing over 150,000 tons of emissions. We also do a lot to engage the public try to get them to participate and urging them to do air-friendly behaviors. We have a lot of public programs such as our Healthy Air Living campaign, Make One Change campaign, and try to encourage just the general public to do what they can to make those little changes that make an overall impact in the San Joaquin Valley. And all these clean air investments have significantly improved the valley's air quality, and air quality is better than any time it's ever been. So this chart shows major reductions in pollution. As you can see, that over 85% reduction in emissions have just occurred from stationary sources. Those are sources that are under the district's control. But in 1980, over 800 tons per day of emissions, and now we're just, in 2015, we're hovering around 280 tons per day. So significant reductions in NOx emissions. This slide shows that the population exposure, where the population experiences high levels of PM2.5 concentrations, has been reduced significantly over the years, over an 85% reduction in unhealthy levels of PM2.5 concentration. So in building this strategy to come into attainment with these very strict standards, first it builds on a dozen of attainment plans that have already been in place over the last couple of decades. And those attainment plans continue to achieve emission reductions to date and will continue to get reductions till 2024, 2025. So the proposed strategy also includes new district stationary source measures that apply valley-wide. And then you also have measures that apply in specific areas that are more difficult to come into attainment, which we're referring to as hotspot areas. It also includes new CARB mobile source measures, and they're both, there's two elements, a regulatory component and an incentive-based component of these measures. So this chart, this slide shows the control strategy that has achieved significant emission reductions. If you can see from 2000, which is includes some of our existing strategies, all the way down to where 2025 is. You have about, just from our current strategy, in 2025 you'll get down to about 145 tons per day. The new strategy continues to get those emissions much lower. And this slide just specifically relies on NOx emissions, but we're also getting significant direct PM2.5 emission reductions as well. So I won't go into, for time's sake, I won't go into too much detail with the specific valley-wide measures, but the rules I'm going to talk about, or the source categories that I'm going to talk about, have already gone through multiple iterations of rule amendments. And many of these source categories have already reduced emissions by over 80%, 85%, some as high as 95% and 99%. So we're going to be going even further, and that's how difficult the challenge is, that we have to go further on these sources. So we have proposed measures on boilers, steam generators, and process heaters, flares, municipal solid waste fired boilers, and we'll be pursuing control measures that will reduce the NOx emissions much further. So without going into more details on that. Other valley-wide measures we're looking at are non-agriculture internal combustion engines, agriculture internal combustion engines, glass melting furnaces, and conservation management practices. So we'll be looking at reducing those NOx emissions and PM2.5 emissions much lower to the extent that they are technologically feasible and economically feasible. Now, after applying these valley-wide measures, what we find is that the majority of the valley, including CARB measures, which they'll talk about today, you'll find that the vast majority of the valley comes into attainment just by implementing these very strict measures. However, there are a couple regions, or a few regions in the valley, that still have higher concentrations of the federal standards. So we believe that the hotspot strategy is the only path available to address these remaining non-attainment locations, specifically Fresno County and Kern County. So what we're applying in those regions is more stringent wood burning requirements, increased incentives to fund natural gas conversions in those areas, and incentives for the installation of controls for under-fire char broilers in hotspot urban areas with a regulatory backstop to encourage participation. Just as a note, a $50 million investment towards these categories is equivalent to a benefit of $14 billion in NOx reductions for mobile source categories. So like I said before, funding and incentive, much of these strategies, including CARB's mobile source strategies, are based on huge amounts of incentives being available. So within the 2024-25 timeframe, so we need significant reductions for mobile sources, and we need significant incentives associated with that. We're talking about in the tunes of billions of dollars needed in order to be able to come into attainment with these very strict standards. It also requires significant new and well-sustained funding from the state for these measures. It also requires federal funding to supplement our local funds. And of course, we've been really successful over this last year with AB 134 and Farmer, and we need to continue those efforts to get significant new funding here into the valley. So I'm going to turn over to Samir.
Yeah, so let me wrap up this presentation and talk a bit about where we are today. So for those of you that have been involved in this process, and for those of you that are new to the process, welcome. There's quite a bit of information about this PM plan available, and hopefully by the time you finish this meeting, you feel well connected in terms of where we are with the plan and where you can find that information. Our webpage has that information. CARB's webpage also links to that information. So we've been using all this public engagement to really sharpen our pencils, make sure that we have plan elements. You've seen CARB recently post our mobile source measures. Our plan is to actually post our draft plan on the local side, the remaining elements. We already do have several chapters and appendices that are available today on our website, the remaining elements by the end of this week for public review and hopefully additional engagement as you decide that you have any questions or comments or concerns. At that point, basically communicate those over to us. We want to continue this engagement process by, again, opening up a commenting period on this plan. We'll post this plan in its entirety, like I said, by the end of this week, with a goal, hopefully, assuming that we're able to resolve all of the issues that may remain, any questions or concerns that come in, with a goal of presenting to the plan to our district governing board as soon as possible, which in this case would be at our November board meeting. Now, if we have any issues with being able to schedule that meeting or issues that have to be resolved through additional public process, and today I think we'll get a better sense of sort of where we are with some of these issues that could go well beyond that November meeting. But I think our goal here with several years of developing these measures, having CARB come in with their CARB mobile source measures, having us refine the local measures and continue to refine them now as we work on this draft that we're about to publish, I think we're at a point now where hopefully we can actually pull all this together, take everybody's comments, and basically present a draft of this plan to our board in that November timeframe is the goal there. Of course, CARB has the other big element to this plan, you know, with the mobile source measures. They would actually have to formally adopt those mobile source SIP measures in, you know, into the SIP, into the state implementation plan. They'll talk some more about that as part of their presentation. But ultimately, you know, CARB would have to basically act on this plan subsequent to our board taking action on the plan. So we're moving fast here. I think we're getting closer to a point where we can present something to our governing board. That draft will be ready by the end of this week, and we look forward to any comments or questions that come in subsequent to the posting of that draft. So these are just some links to where you can find information. We have a PM plan webpage where all of this is posted. You can email comments to us. You can actually get email updates through our listserv, or you can just call us and set up a meeting to come in and actually talk to us face-to-face or by phone to actually have that interaction. We've really appreciated, like I said before, all the comments that have come in and all the comments that we've received so far tonight. I wanted to thank you know, all of the advocates here that put together. I didn't get a chance to read all of this in the few minutes that I had it here before the meeting. I wanted to thank you for what seemed to be very you know, thoughtful and detailed ideas here. These are things that we're going to be taking a look at. And again, just wanted to thank Senator Flores and all the board members for being here tonight and setting up this meeting.
Thank you. I know there will be some questions on some of the presentations, but we'll go ahead and follow the agenda, and then we'll get some questions from the dais and then obviously from the community and the public. So let's go ahead and turn to the San Joaquin, from the CARB, California Resources Board.
Good evening. Thank you. I appreciate all of you taking the time to come out and be with us this evening. Before I start on my actual presentation, I just want to confirm with my staff, is there an email address for people who are watching the webcast to email in questions? Okay, so they can see that, it's being scrolled? Okay, great. So just for those of you on the webcast, I just want to let you know that following the panel discussion, we will have about an hour for public testimony, and during that period of time, staff will be reading the comments or questions that come in through the web, and so you will be heard and your concerns will be raised with the panel. So I'm going to try in my presentation not to duplicate exactly some of what you might have heard already from the district, because there are some parallels here, and in all honesty, we did not coordinate on our presentations, and so there's good news and bad news. The good news is that what you're seeing is some echoing of what we see as some strengths of the process. The downside is that there may be some duplication of material. But I think the one thing that I want to emphasize on this slide on the strength of the plan, it goes back to not just the fact that we've been working on this plan for 2 or 3 years, but, and Shiraz alluded to this, but this, the San Joaquin Valley is one of the most studied air basins in the world. There's been more than 20 years of intensive scientific studies that have been done in the valley to understand the nature of particulate matter, and especially fine particulate matter, which is what we're all here to talk about today, which is how can we reduce our exposure to fine particulate, PM2.5. And so I just want to emphasize that the process that CARB staff have been going through with the district is not simply a bureaucratic exercise, but it's been based on a very solid foundation of scientific and technical work that's been done not just over the past 2 or 3 years, but actually over the past several decades. Having said that, what is in the air that you're all breathing? It's a complex chemical soup. The particulate is a combination of what we call primary PM, which is what's actually produced, let's say, when you burn something or when the exhaust that comes out of a tailpipe, you get directly emitted particulate. And that's about half of what you would find in the air that you're breathing in the valley. The other half is coming from what we call secondary particulate, which is when you get the combination of pollutants like when you have ammonia combining with oxides of nitrogen from vehicle exhaust, that forms ammonium nitrate, which is what we call secondary particulate. So as we think about the challenges of developing a plan that's really going to be effective and that's going to achieve the clean air that we all want, it's really not a simple process. It's how do you figure out what are the sources that are contributing to this complex chemical soup, and then how do you come up with the most cost-effective approaches to reducing the emissions from those very different types of sources. And that can range, and Shiraz talked about this, it can range from anything like fireplaces, which are very much a source of direct PM, to sources like vehicles, which they contribute a small amount of primary PM. Diesel trucks contribute quite a bit, but they're getting cleaned up a lot. But a lot of the vehicle emissions contribution is in the form of oxides of nitrogen that form secondary particulate. So what are we trying to do in this plan? Well, obviously to reduce fine particulate matters significantly. And as this slide shows, the goal that we have in this plan is to reduce fine particulate concentrations by 40% between 2013 and 2024, which is the attainment year. And so this, the concentrations that we're looking at are going from about 60 micrograms per cubic meter to about 35 micrograms per cubic meter. And all of these data that I'm showing you are not modeled. They're based, there's some modeling that goes on, but it goes back to the scientific foundation. It's based on a network of monitoring sites that are operated both by the Air Resources Board and the district that really enable us to understand what the concentrations of fine particulate are in the valley, really on an hourly basis throughout the course of the year over a multiple year period. So if you think back to that slide, how much of the particulate matter is primary, how much is secondary, how much is coming from sources that are under district control, and how much is coming from sources that are under state control or CARB control, about half of the particulate is coming from sources that are under district control. And those are primarily contributors to primary PM, so burning, typically burning sources are one of the major areas where the district has a lot of authority. CARB's contribution is, again, about 50%, in other words, to the air pollution problem that you're experiencing right now in the valley. When you look at the plan that we have been working very closely with the district on, we've come up with a mix of strategies, and about three-quarters of the pollution or emission reductions that we're aiming for in this plan are coming from state measures, and about a quarter are coming from district measures. And this is based on taking both the two main contributors to PM that we're considering in this plan, oxides of nitrogen and fine particulate, PM2.5. You can normalize those two to a common currency of PM2.5. And when you do that, you can come up with a pie chart like this. And just, I just want to emphasize that that last pie chart, I'll go back to that, this reflects the contribution valley-wide. And one thing that's really important to think about is that the emissions or the pollution that you're breathing in any given area is going to be a reflection of all of the sources in that particular area. And so this combination of measures are going to have different benefits depending upon where you are in the valley. And so there's some areas, I think, that the district's hotspot strategy, for example, is really going to address burning in large in a lot of the urban areas in the valley. And so I think what we're going to see is that the district's contribution is going to be much more significant in some of these urban areas than may be reflected in this pie chart. This slide's a little bit overwhelming, but let me just sort of, I'll let you explore it at your leisure, but I'll sort of address a few things at a high level. This is the suite of mobile source measures that CARB is taking forward to achieve the reductions that are shown in the previous pie chart. And what we're looking to achieve is a reduction of 32 tons per day of NOx, oxides of nitrogen, which is a contributor to PM2.5, and 1 ton per day of direct PM. It's coming from essentially a suite of about 20 different regulations or measures that CARB has either already adopted or are considering. So about 15 of these measures were approved by the CARB board a year ago, and those are the ones that are shown in the top part of the chart. Of those, two of those have already been adopted by the CARB board as regulations. And then at the bottom of the table are those new measures that are being proposed as what we would consider a San Joaquin Valley supplement to the statewide strategy. Just to let you know how challenging the issue is of reducing mobile source emissions, we are not leaving anything off the table. In other words, when these measures are covering everything from literally lawnmowers all the way up through locomotives, including passenger vehicles, heavy-duty trucks. And what we're really targeting this in three specific approaches. One is we're setting new vehicle emission standards, which is requiring new vehicles to be much cleaner than they were previously. The other is we have strategies to ensure that vehicles that are operating stay clean. So, for example, the regulation that we recently adopted to lower the opacity limits for heavy-duty trucks. And the third strategy that we're pursuing is turning over vehicles, which is an extremely difficult task because those vehicles still have some useful life. And so some of the strategies that we're proposing as part of the plan are in some ways the most challenging, and those are ones that are going to be requiring turning over or incentivizing turning over of trucks, off-road equipment like construction equipment, as well as agricultural equipment like tractors, ag tractors. So what are our overall priorities as we work through the what we hope are the final stages here of this plan? Well, the first, and this has been addressed at some length already, but we want to ensure that there's sufficient time for public process. And it's really good news to hear that the district will have their draft plan out on the street by the end of the week. That will then allow CARB staff as well as the public to be able to review the complete draft plan and to provide some comment and really be able to have some back and forth with the district on the draft plan. The other major challenge, and Shiraz touched on this, is really it's a really heavy lift, which is getting the incentive funding needed to turn over 12,000 pieces of ag equipment and 33,000 trucks. So the dirtiest of those pieces of equipment we want to turn over to clean equipment. And then a third piece, which sometimes is overlooked but is really critical, it's in some ways easy to adopt a regulation. It's sometimes challenging to ensure it's enforced and implemented properly. And that's an area where we want to ensure that both for ourselves and for district measures that those are addressed properly. But obviously our focus is going to be on measures that are under our direct control. So we do have shared challenges, and again, I don't want to beat this to death, but we need a lot of money for this plan to be successful. Collaboration is going to be key, and again, enforcement, implementation of the measures is going to be really critical to ensure that we achieve the clean air benefits that we're all looking for. And then this goes back, this really in some ways connects some of what Meredith talked about, and also Samir, which is the timing for completing the plan, and I think it's really helpful to have heard from the district because that will help us to put some dates on this timeline. But essentially, really what we're aiming for here is for the CARB board to consider the mobile source component of the plan in October, and then we would like to take the complete plan to our board in December, at which time we would forward it to USEPA in January.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and turn to industry, and then we'll move to the affected advocates right after that, and then we'll go into some comments.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Just one question. Ballpark, how many tons of NOx convert to a ton of PM2.5? Roughly. Is that a fair question?
Two.
So the indirect PM2.5 from NOx, roughly how many tons of NOx will create a ton of indirect PM2.5?
For the calculations that we've done, it's 2 tons of NOx combines with ammonia to create one ton of PM2.5.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I'll go first. Roger Isom, California Cotton Generators and Growers and Western Ag Processors. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the comments today on behalf of the ag industry. And let me start by stating what I think everybody already knows, and that this standard before us today is a very tough standard. I think Meredith leaned over to me before the meeting and said that a good plan will aggravate everybody. So consider mission accomplished. What that means is that everybody's going to have to do their part, including agriculture. And, you know, I stand before you today to tell you that agriculture is going to do its part, as we always have. I think that we have set a pretty good track record when you look at air quality. Somebody mentioned the conservation management practice rule, and we set out on that in a similar type format. We were asked to get 32 tons of PM10 reductions, and we got 34.5 when it was all said and done. Similarly, the district was looking at replacing diesel pump engines with electric motors, and so we set out on a journey with the PUC, with ARB, the district, and the utilities themselves, and created a Ag ICE program, which created basically a very attractive electric rate tariff and incentives for poles and lines and the engines themselves. It was out of the box, and the goal was to replace 1,000 engines, and in the end, we replaced over 2,000 of them. In the 2008 SIP, ozone SIP, the ARB asked us to get 5 to 10 tons of NOx reductions from tractor replacement. And in the end, we got more than 15 tons of NOx reductions, and we never have stopped. We've continued to do that. So I think that the record is there. We recognize what this standard presents and that we're a part of that pie and that we're going to have to be part of the solution. So we are going to do its part. But there are some caveats there. It has to be reasonable. Replacing 12,000 tractors in 5 years is a monumental task. We have a lot of concerns with that. The cost of Tier 4 final equipment is very expensive compared to what we have been paying. We're concerned with the ability of the tractor manufacturers to build the equipment because everything basically is now made to order. And so how do we get that done in a timely manner, basically in this 5 years? We're also the only region in the country, and for that matter, the only region in the state that's having to do this. So that creates a significant economic disadvantage compared to other areas. We're also concurrently having to replace our trucks during this same time frame. Granted, it'll be done by 2023, but essentially the same time frame. And as if you paid real close attention there to the district's plan, at the same time, they're also asking us to replace our Tier 3 pump engines at the very same time with Tier 4 pump engines or to electric. So there's a lot of challenges on the air quality side there. And then there's the biggest concern that we have, and that is what we're considering the fundamental concern with this plan is it relies upon yet unsecured cap and trade funds. Now, that's not to say that we aren't going to go for it. We are. We played a very instrumental role in getting the farmer funding that we had a workshop today at the district on it, $108 million to this San Joaquin Valley to replace ag tractors, trucks, and a new category with our utility vehicles. Converting those to electric. So we are going to be there. We are going to fight for that funding going forward, but this plan is asking for a commitment of 5 years. That's tough. And it's going to take everybody in this room to help us get that done. We will have a new governor. We'll have some new legislators that aren't familiar with this. And so it's a big challenge to ask for a lot of money. Everybody sees the cap and trade funding as the golden goose, and everybody wants it from everything from low-income housing to high-speed rail to everything else. But this is a significant program. This gets actual emission reductions, and it's something we think is beneficial, but it's going to take that in order for us to get that part of the pie that you want us to get. We do have some other concerns with the plan. The fugitive dust requirements, the science that Mr. Benjamin referred to, says that there's little to no impact from fugitive dust on PM2.5, and in particular, the two measures that the district identified, conservation tillage and fallow land, present challenges to us. Conservation tillage works when you're only talking about one or two crops, not what we grow here in the San Joaquin Valley. I know because our association has spent research dollars with UC Cooperative Extension looking at conservation tillage over the last 3 years, trying to find a way to make it work. On the fallowed land, it's fallowed for a reason. It's fallowed because we don't have water. And if you don't have water, you don't have a crop. If you don't have crop, you don't have income. So we're not really sure how that's going to be played out. The district hasn't given us specific measures with that. They just said they want to look at fallow land, so that's a challenge and a question that we have. Another issue is that pump engine rule. It was only a few years ago, January 1, 2009, that we had to replace all of our Tier Zeros. Just 6 years later, January 1, 2015, we've had to replace all of the Tier 1s and Tier 2s, and now we're turning right back around and having to replace our Tier 3s with Tier 4 or electric. So that's a big challenge. Again, not saying that we're not here at the table, we're not going to do it. It's just you have to understand that as we go forward. Also, we're concerned with other impacts outside of air quality that farmers are having to face right now. For example, farmers are being asked to reduce the amount of nitrogen going into groundwater, so we're being subjected to the Irrigated Lands Program, which requires farm evaluations, nitrogen management plans, and best management practices, and we're in the middle of that. In this same time period that we're going to be replacing tractors and trucks, you'll start to see the implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Without getting into a lot of details or issues on that, it will reduce irrigated agriculture in this valley, and so that's going to have an impact on us. Similarly, the unimpaired flows requirements in the three tributaries to the San Joaquin River is going to affect ag land in Merced, Stanislaus, and San Joaquin counties. Layer over the top of that, a minimum wage increase every year for the next 4 years, a gradual decrease in ag overtime during that same time period, and increasing electrical rates, which are going to be exacerbated by today's passage of SB 100. So what I'm trying to say is that agriculture has an issue, and that's the inability to pass along cost. So while you're asking us to do this, we're facing increasing costs, so it presents a challenge. The way to do that is to rely upon incentives, and our concern is that it relies upon incentives that we simply just do not have right now. But I assure you we are going to be at the table. We have already started meeting with legislators on trying to continue cap and trade funding beyond our two-year agreement that we have, and we hope that we're successful, and if we do, we'll get more than 8 tons. That's the commitment we make to you guys today. Thank you.
John Larea with the California League of Food Producers. First of all, let me apologize, but I am just now beginning to get involved in this particular issue. I have not been involved in the past, so if I'm not up to speed on everything, please forgive me. I will be in the coming weeks here. But that said, I did talk to some of our members associated with, you know, looking at the plan here itself. And the one, when Mr. Benjamin mentioned collaboration, you know, the past, the food processors, because we are large industrial users, you know, have found we can collaborate a lot with the Air District here and been successful in the past, and they and our people fully expect to continue that. However, Shiraz did mention that this is going to cost billions of dollars, and as Roger pointed out, you know, they're looking at the golden goose. Well, as part of that flock, our members are the ones who pay into that. And so we are looking at huge cost increases that are going to be coming. And so we are urging the staff and the state to keep their eye on the other cost factors that may impact industries out here that may make this a very, very difficult lift for us. Just as an example, I spent a lot of my time over at the PUC dealing with rates. I can tell you right now, within the next 3 years, we're going to see significant rate increases associated with not only the fire damages that the utilities are seeking, but also in terms of gas transportation and storage based upon the loss of storage from some of the utilities, as well as the safety issues that have been raised, and they are refurbishing their system. Plus, we have the hardening of the system that PG&E is now looking at and the other utilities. These are going to cost billions of dollars. In the last rate case that we had in terms of gas transportation, it effectively doubled our transportation rates. And these are not $10,000. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars that suddenly double in the middle of our seasons 2 years ago. And now we have another one that's coming up, and they're looking for an additional, not quite that, about 60% increase. Now, what does that mean? Essentially, PG&E in the last GT&S rate case, that's gas transportation and storage rate case, received nearly $4 billion over the three-year period. They're looking at another three-something billion dollars. And that's coming out of mostly, everybody here has experienced that, so you know what that impact is because you've seen your gas bills raise over the last 3 years. Some of the residentials are not so much, but for industrials, it is a huge cost. The second cost, of course, is what's going to happen with the fire damage. That's got to come out of someplace. If they're looking at cap and trade monies on that, you know, that's money that's going to go to that. It won't go to this. Where are you going to get your money for the billions? There are multiple groups looking to tap into cap and trade monies right now, and they all want to get it. We've been lucky just on the food production investment program that the governor put through. He put $60 million towards food processors. That is literally the first time that cap and trade money has gone back to companies that have been subject to the cap and trade. I mean, we're the ones that we could have been doing this for years, and we are taking full advantage of that, and that money may now disappear because this. So please keep an eye on the costs, keep an eye on the technologies. There are no new technologies for us to be able to strap on and reduce our emissions in a large form. And if we are forced to go, if costs from all sectors come in and it starts to push us on and we have to reduce our production, that's going to mean job losses here. And there's no other way around it. And I've asked my guys over and over again, what is the best way that you can respond to this when you have significant cost increases over a short period of time? He said, we lose people. That's all there is to it. We can't do it any other way. We reduce production or lose people. So there is a significant cost factor associated with this. Finally, keep the incentive programs as much as we can. I mean, we will work with you to help to get the funding that's needed to come down here. But we also want to see it directed at some of the areas that will help us the most as well, and that's in the mobile sources. We want to see a large funding incentive going towards mobile sources because that's the biggest issue in the valley for us right now. While it doesn't impact us directly, indirectly it takes the pressure off of us and it goes after what we can help on both levels, not only here in the valley but also at the state level under the cap and trade as well. So those are the areas that we're the most concerned about, but you can expect us to be present at the table from now on.
My name is Christine Luther Zimmerman, and I'm a lifelong Kern County resident. So my name is Christine Luther Zimmerman. I'm a lifelong Kern County resident from Taft, actually, and I'm also an employee at Western States Petroleum Association. I appreciate the opportunity to participate as a member of this panel and in the PM 2.5 attainment plan process as both a resident and a member of industry. PM 2.5 reduction and attainment, of course, is of vital importance to all Valley residents and is something we should all care very deeply about. At WISPA, we recognize the significant effort made by our Air District and the Air Resources Board, both in developing this attainment plan and engaging the public process to gather feedback on it. WISPA also acknowledges the significant challenge we all face in meeting this important standard. It is of value to discuss the significant stationary source improvements that have been made over the years, while also being mindful of the significant issues surrounding PM 2.5 mobile source issues. Over the years, stationary sources have reduced their PM emissions by over 80%. A combined $40 billion have been spent by industry to date on emission reduction. As we discuss these statistics, though, we must also note that here in the San Joaquin Valley, mobile source PM 2.5 emissions account for nearly 80% of total emissions. So this means that 85% of PM 2.5 emissions in the San Joaquin Valley are outside the jurisdiction of our local air district, and we're very mindful of that fact. Given the considerable existing stationary source reduction that has already been accounted for, incentive program funding similar to existing Rule 4320 Aero fee-style programs become very important, in our opinion, going forward as we strive for even greater emission reduction. This type of program can help fund specific underfunded groups develop what is needed to attain compliance with most stringent measures. Helping these groups, we believe, is essential in furthering our path to attainment. At the same time, ongoing technology development to further reduce emissions is an ever-present and very expensive pursuit that we follow. I wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to speak, and in summary, I want to add that while we all face challenges in this attainment effort, we see the essential nature of developing the Valley's portion of the state implementation plan and its associated rules. Continuing the collaborative rulemaking process can drive technology, further reduce emissions, and help fund emission reduction throughout the valley, particularly as focused emission reduction areas are considered. Thank you.
From industry at this point? Nope. We'll save for public comment. Let's turn to the advocates if we could. Genevieve?
Hello, everyone. My name is Genevieve Gale. I'm a policy associate with the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition, or CVAC. And we're a coalition of lots of community groups in the valley, and we work toward cleaning the air in the San Joaquin Valley. I'd like to introduce quickly, we've got Nayamin Martinez here from CCEJN, which is a partner group, and also Cesar as well, and then Tom France, who's a longtime air quality advocate. I'll start it once perhaps the... There we go. So we talk about PM2.5, which I know is a really technical term, and what it means is just small particles in the air that we breathe. And it is worse in the wintertime when the cold air helps form these particles in the air, but we're also experiencing now in the summertime with the wildfires. So it's becoming a year-long problem that we all have to deal with. And the impacts are really scary. When you breathe it in, it exacerbates asthma and can lead to respiratory diseases, but it can also enter our bloodstream and travel to our heart and our brain. So it is statistically correlated with heart attack and increased incidences of stroke. So it's a dangerous pollutant, and we are the most polluted air basin in the nation for fine particle pollution. So I know that is why you are all here today, and I thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us. And before I move on, about 1,200 people die every year in the valley from particle pollution exposure. So this is a big problem, and it's scary. And the health costs are about $6 billion just for our valley. So I know we're talking a lot about cost to industry, which is really important. We need jobs. We need strong industries. We need strong tax base. But our residents here in the valley are already suffering, and now we have to. Each resident has to pay about $1,600 a year in health costs. So if you personally aren't paying that, that means your neighbor is paying double. So we definitely have to look at both sides of the equation. And the purpose of our presentation today is to highlight the strengths of the plan. There are some really good things that have been put in this plan, thanks for the work of the district and CARB and advocates, and also highlight places where maybe we can where we can do better. And so I'll start with the strengths. CARB has committed to an assortment of mobile source measures that will reduce emissions from trucks and tractors and passenger vehicles. And the district also, while they don't have regulatory authority over these mobile sources, they've done a great job of bringing incentive money into the valley. They have an amazing tractor and truck trade-up program to get the newest trucks and tractors in and the oldest equipment out. The district's also focusing on residential wood burning, so our fireplaces, as well as commercial cooking, which I'll get into are surprisingly large sources of pollution here. And CARB is also committed to a rule on agricultural tractors sometime in the future, so that's a really big improvement. And the district is also committed to looking at a whole host of other measures, such as boilers and steam generators, flare minimization plans, reducing emissions from engines, focusing on NOx reductions from glass facilities, enhanced conservation management practices. So we look forward to seeing those rules more fully fleshed out and seeing if we can get some emission reductions from them. So in total, I think what we're seeing is a really impressive collaboration, and a lot of work has gone into this. But I do want to talk a bit about perhaps how we can get to cleaner air faster. So the Clean Air Act, which is the reason we're all here and the reason why we are putting this plan together, states that we need to achieve attainment as expeditiously as practical. So that's lingo for saying we need to get there as fast as possible. And so the plan that has been put together shows that we're going to get there, but not right away. So is there ways that we can move faster together? And that's what I want to focus on today. So we've already talked about where sources of pollution come from, and I know that gets really confusing because we're using different acronyms and different statistics. But if you can imagine, you take one particle out of the air and you look at it, half of it is what CARB described is that ammonium nitrate. It's the stuff from cars and trucks mixing with ammonia, which comes mainly from dairies and fertilizers. So half of it is that ammonia nitrate. The other half is carbon. And so CVAC likes to focus on carbon because it is more dangerous to public health. And also it has the most effective means of reducing overall pollution if you reduce carbon. And so if you look at the emissions inventory for our valley, this is projected 2019 emissions. It's hard to see, so I'll say it out loud here. The largest chunk of carbon comes from residential burning, so about 25%. I didn't know that. I thought my fireplace was not a big deal, but apparently when you add them all up, it is. I should probably go slower for the translator. Everybody should. The second largest source comes from agricultural burning. So I'm sure that we've all seen going up and down the highways or the rural roads, we've seen open ag burning. So that's the second largest. The third largest is from commercial cooking. So that was also surprising. I didn't think that our restaurants were emitting a lot of pollution, but apparently they are. And then next up is a slew of mobile sources and a slew of stationary sources. And that's lingo for things that are on wheels and things that are in a facility or a factory or just staying put, also known as point sources. So I'm going to dive into a few of these and see if we can strengthen the plan. This is a map here. You have residential wood burning emissions. It's a heat map on the left-hand side. And so you can see where wood burning emissions are the highest. And unsurprisingly, that's in the urban areas because that's where a lot of our fireplaces are, right? So hotspot in Fresno, hotspot in Bakersfield, lots of hotspots up there in the North Valley. And on the right-hand side, you have the Air District's hotspot strategy. And so to reduce emissions, the Air District says, we will reduce the number of days that a person can burn in their fireplace for Fresno County, Kern County, and a handful of select communities in the valley. And so we applaud the district in going after the largest source of carbon. It's really important, and it's a big part of this plan that's going to help us reach attainment. But there are two points that CVAC would like to make. And the first is that we are always focusing on how we can be health protective, not necessarily how we can reach attainment by a certain date, but like how can we protect people. And so we have a lot of emissions happening in the North Valley, but no new measures to protect people in the North Valley. So we think this hotspot strategy does not protect everyone. Especially other communities that are the same size and perhaps have more pollution. And the second point is that the hotspot strategy is a little confusing. So right now, there's a threshold that says, you know, when pollution reaches this level, you can't burn. Well, now, and then if you have a registered device, you can burn, but then if it reaches another threshold, you can't. So we have two thresholds right now. This would create four different thresholds here for different areas depending on what county or city you live in, and it's a little complicated to message. I don't know if everyone here knows when they can or cannot burn. So CVAC advocates for just a 1 microgram threshold for the whole valley. So if it's a burn day, then we can just say, they can say it on the radio, they can say it on the news. If it's a no-burn day, we can let everyone know. So we're concerned about the messaging and enforcement of a very complicated plan like this. But I bring this up to the community because we want your input to see how you feel about the hotspot strategy and different iterations of it. Moving on to commercial cooking, which we talked about is the second largest source. We, again, applaud the district for focusing on commercial cooking. Next to residential wood burning, it is one of the most, is one of the most cost-effective strategies for reducing pollution, especially when you compare it to strategies focusing on those heavy-duty trucks or other really expensive equipment. This is one of the more cost-effective ones, so that's exciting. And again, this is commercial cooking emissions next to the Air District hotspot strategy. And again, we're concerned that we're leaving some communities out, that those in the North Valley will not see the emission reductions. So we advocate for, again, focusing on all large commercial cooking operations and providing incentives for all of those operations to upgrade. And also to say that if we do expand the hotspot strategy or we make it a whole valley-wide strategy, we're going to be reducing more emissions, right? So we're most likely going to get to attainment faster. I think that's an important point. The third largest source of carbon was agricultural burning, and I'm actually going to pass it to Tom France to speak on ag burning. And there you go.
Okay, open ag burning. I'm an almond farmer. I've been in an extended ag family now. I farm currently, but my whole life has been in agriculture. And I remember in 2003, Senator Flores passed SB 705, which phased out open ag burning, like you see in this video. It was supposed to be long gone by now. But the fact is, in 2017, there was more acres of open ag burning than in 2003. In this valley. Permits were given out because supposedly there was no place to put the ground up trees and because some biomass plants had shut down. The reality is we're taking trees out of the forest to burn here on the floor, so ag can't send their material to these plants. We're also taking lots of landfill diversion from LA to burn here in the valley, so ag can't use those plants that are taking that waste. But anyway, we don't need to do this burning. This burning harms public health like almost nothing else when it comes into your home and yard. And we know how far smoke can drift. This burning you see right here was just this last winter. Now, the solution is whole orchard recycling. This is the obvious solution, returning this biomass to the soil. It's expensive, you know, maybe $800 to $1,000 an acre. The Air District has given permits to do this open burning in 2015 it was $250 an acre. We think it's about $500 an acre now. I'm not sure. It's the cheapest option for the farmer right now is to do this open ag burning. I beg you to put this into the plan and at least up the cost of a permit to destroy this good clean biomass in this way and pollute our air. The whole orchard recycling is growing leaps and bounds right now. 3 years ago, I watched 400 acres just off of Laredo Highway in Kern County be plowed under. The trees growing there today look wonderful. My neighbors did this last year, several hundred acres, right 3 miles from where I live. Thousands of acres, this has been done now in recent years. In my own family farm, we're going to do it in 2 weeks. You're welcome to come down and watch the trees be ground and the big manure spreaders spread those chips out. Then they're dissed under. New trees will be put in within 3 months. And they're going to do wonderful. And the UC scientists who have already studied this for 9 or 10 years show nothing but increased yields from this practice that more than pays for the practice at least 3 times over. You recycle all of the nutrients, the nitrogen, the potassium that we're spending, you know, millions of dollars to purchase and import. You're recycling those nutrients, and you're putting carbon in the ground, which is exactly what some of our greenhouse goals that's coming from the state say we have to do. And so we need that synergy as well with the greenhouse gas reductions. But farmers don't need money to do this, but at least you could do is make it more expensive to do something stupid, which is light a match to it. Then the farmers will do the right thing, problem solved. It's going to happen anyway, so if you want to incentivize it, you know, maybe some of these big grinding machines could be paid for to be a little bit more efficient and a little bit more cleaner. But the technology is all there. We don't need new technology. The Biomass Summit talked about all kinds of ridiculous things like biochar and pyrolysis machines and portable generators all over the valley and air curtain burners. That's all nonsense. We're going to put this stuff back in the ground. It's what we should have been doing a long time ago, and it's actually the cheapest thing to do now. So let's put it in the plan, please.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, CVAC would like to see ag burning as part of the plan, and we officially suggest just changing the incentive structure, so making it more expensive to burn, but also giving farmers incentive money to do the right thing. So just in changing the structure, and because farmers do want to do the right thing. Almost lastly up, I will talk a bit about that other section that was in the pie chart, which was stationary sources. And when you look into those stationary sources, you'll find that the largest emitters happen to be oil and gas companies. And so this is a pie chart here of total PM2.5 emissions from the large stationary sources in the San Joaquin Valley. And so Chevron takes about a third of that, followed by a few other oil and gas operations. And so I will give it to Cesar to talk a little bit about that and then maybe bring it back in and pass it on.
Yeah, I do a lot of my work in rural communities such as Shafter, Lost Hills, Arvin, places like this, and the health impacts in the community are very prevalent there. As Genevieve stated, it's around $1,600 per person when it comes to health costs. To put that into perspective, my little sister has asthma. To buy her inhaler, it costs about four times more than it does for a polluter to put one ton of carbon into the air. So when we put that into perspective, it kind of seems like the scales are tipped away from the communities. Kern County has expected to have an increase of 72,000 wells over the next 25 years. And I know there's some members of CARB that were here during a tour that we gave in Kern County. I'm not sure if you remember, but Howard Wines, who is a director of fire prevention and the Environmental Services Office in Bakersfield, said that he's seen more oil and gas permits this year than he's ever seen come across his desk in the last decade. So there's definitely a ramping up in the production, especially in Kern and in the areas that fall under the jurisdiction of Howard Wines. This increase will amount to around 780,000 tons of pollution in the air by 2030, which will make these stationary sources a lion's share of the pollution when it comes to Kern County, about 40% of it. There will be about 40% of the PM2.5 and 70% of the nitrogen oxide emissions. So even with all the talk of mitigations and changes in policy that we're talking about, this expansion and explosion of oil production is going to counteract all the good work that we're doing now. Three things that I would like to say that are at CVAC's points that can help bring us into attainment much more easily is by taking a look at Air District existing rules surrounding small equipment, well maintenance, treaty operations, or small producers, which are a big problem in rural communities. Just one quick example is there's a tank in the middle of Arvin, which is known as a small producer. We have, every year we do a tour with a flare camera. Every year that tank has caught spewing emissions, not from a vent, which it is where it is allowed to vent due to the small producer's rule, but from a thief hatch, which is poorly closed, which is something that's very fixable. And in all the complaints, it says that there will be no action taken or no follow-up. There will be no inspection done because they enjoy an exemption from the air district. Secondarily, solar-powered boilers and steam generators are doing a lot in the oil fields to offset the pollution, and CVAC would like to see the district require all boilers to be solar-powered. And finally, there's some programs that the district has to offset pollutions, and some of them should be looked at to make sure that they are working effectively and doing the intended job, like ERC banking system.
Thanks, Cesar. Oh, great. I will 10 seconds quickly talk about that other half of the chart, the ammonia and the nitrate, or the NOx. And we know the NOx comes from mobile sources. And CARB is doing a good job at addressing those, but obviously rules can always be implemented faster. Wink, wink. And also the ammonia side of the equation has not been addressed. So CVAC does advocate for an analysis, a feasibility study on what ammonia reductions would look like, which they have done, but what's the feasibility and the cost of actual control measures. So that's kind of the next step in figuring out how we can reduce ammonia. And now I will pass it off to Naomeen for the last slide.
So what can we do while we wait for 2024 to hopefully, if everything goes as planned, it will reach attainment? There's much more than we can do, especially for the Air District to fulfill one of its primary duties, which is protect public health of everyone living in the San Joaquin Valley, not only people living in the cities, not only people living in the hotspots, but outside the hotspots too, because our health is as important as those living in the urban areas. And I don't care if that will cost more dollars. My life is as worthy as everybody else's lives. And how we can do this, having a very robust and well-planned communication strategy. There are tons of books that have been written on how you can do this, how you can use public communication as a public health tool. And that means not only sending out a press release when there's a spike in pollution. That means that you are really going to try to increase the knowledge, the awareness of how our personal behaviors affect public health of everyone. So as cozy as it could be to use your fireplace during the winter season, a lot of people don't know that that is not an individual decision that they could do without affecting the health of everyone else in their community. And we haven't seen a really aggressive and well-planned strategy to educate the residents about this impact. It doesn't matter how stringent wood burning rules we have if we don't make a dent in changing the behaviors of the residents in the San Joaquin Valley. So that's something that the Air District should and could do. Why? Because among their ranks, within their very board members, have an expert in public health. Dr. John Capitman could be a great asset because his expertise is public health in designing such a strategy so that we can be better educated, not only how to protect ourselves during spikes, but most importantly, how to protect ourselves about chronic exposure. We cannot be waiting here for 2024 doing nothing. What about the residents who work outside? You and I have the privilege of working inside where we have filters filtering our pollution. But what about the landscapers, our farm workers, our construction workers that are outside 10 or 20 hours or 12 hours a day? What about telling them how to protect their health? And most importantly, we have a very diverse population, so we cannot only rely on sending press releases in English. All public communication strategies should be made at least in the threshold languages that we have in our counties, Hmong and Spanish at the very least. And I think that if we are really serious about protecting public health and more than just attaining, reaching attainment, we need to do a lot more.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I will close it there.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and open this up to public comment. Thanks. And I know we have our magical timer we brought from either Sacramento or this is the local district, but we're going to try to limit these to 2 minutes. And
I will. Ooh.
No problem. There's the magic green.
Okay.
So go ahead and start.
I'll try really hard. I'm Colby Moore with Southern California Gas Company, but I want to speak slowly and clearly for the woman in back. Southern California Gas Company appreciates ARB's new commitment to increase the number of near-zero heavy-duty trucks in the San Joaquin Valley. Compressed natural gas engines that are 90% cleaner than the most stringent engine standard have been available since 2016, and when paired with renewable fuels, they provide significant greenhouse gas and NOx emission reductions. We want to see ARB fulfill its promises to improve public health for residents by prioritizing immediate emission reductions. Therefore, we urge that ARB not wait until 2021 for board action on this measure. when allocating what is now over $1 billion in various funding streams, cap and trade revenue and the VW settlement monies, ARB staff and board members always talk about balance, short-term emission reductions and longer-term transformative technology. Looking at the emissions inventory for the 2.5 plan, one sees that in 2016, the single largest category of NOx in the Air District inventory is heavy, heavy-duty trucks, which contribute 58.5% of all on-road vehicle NOx. It's good to see the recognition that state action is needed to accelerate NOx reductions from this sector, but we think there have been missed opportunities. One example is just 3 months ago, ARB approved a plan for $423 million. Could I have a little bit longer? Thanks. Okay. I will cut out the end. $423 million from a portion of the VW settlement specifically targeting NOx reductions. This plan should have been about mitigating NOx reductions in the most cost-effective, fastest way possible. Yet the most cost-effective projects that deliver the most reductions received the least amount of funding. 71% of the total reductions will come from the low and near zero freight technologies, yet received only 14% of the funds. There was a proposal at the board meeting to move a small portion of the funds to this most cost-effective category. This increase would have funded 100% of the target emissions and would have still allowed for significant funding of transformative technology. Unfortunately, the proposed changes in funding was not approved, and we are disappointed that ARB did not prioritize the most cost-effective reductions that are now being recognized as needed to show attainment in the 2.5 plan.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
That's menacing. My name is Matthew Armstrong. I am a resident of Fresno, and I'm actually very pleased with what I see in the presentations tonight and with a lot of what's been discussed. One concern that I have with any plan of this sort is that the good of the plan may at times overwhelm the good of other goals. So, for example, I'm glad that folks have brought up things such as changes in agricultural methods, also open burning, both residential and industrial, as those can be sources of, for example, black carbon, which could both contribute to climate change, but also is a particulate that could do injury to people's lungs. And a number of recent studies have shown that reducing that would have a number of knock-on benefits. It seems like a place where you could conceivably gain quite a bit to meet California's goals simply by targeting black carbon, by looking at agricultural practices and incentivizing good ones while meeting these goals. And I just am hoping that when I get a chance to read the draft report, which I understand will be due out this week, I see some of that in that. If not, I hope that the next version contains that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I'm Cynthia Pinto Cabrera. I'm a resident of Madera County and a student at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I spend half of my time here in the Fresno-Madera area and my other half at school in Santa Barbara County. I'm here today, first of all, thank all of you panel members for taking your time and listening to all of our comments. I would like to express my issues with the hotspot strategy. As a resident of Madera County, I personally do not fall within the boundaries of the Madera City hotspot. I believe that it is pretty unjust. I personally feel, as a person with asthma, very neglected and left out of this plan. I do have asthma. I experienced my first asthma attack in a pool during a swim meet in the middle of swimming 100-yard butterfly. Health impacts for poor air quality can happen at any time, any place, anywhere, and I feel as though this hotspot strategy does not fully reflect the anywhere part of these health impacts. The Madera County population is estimated to be 156,890, while the city population is 65,508. That leaves out 91,382 people left out of this hotspot strategy. I feel as though this is an environmental injustice that can lead to gentrification. Air quality is being treated as a luxury under this hotspot strategy, and that's just simply unfair. I want to be able to breathe, I want my family to be able to breathe, and I want my community to be able to breathe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Steve Brink with the Cal Forest Trade Association here in California. And just a reminder to everybody, everything we're talking about here is less than half of the particulate matter that's generated in this state every year. The other half is wildfire emissions. Until we get control of the density of vegetation and all the vegetative types in this state, the scientists have shown and project wildfires are going to get worse. It's trending in the wrong direction. So the size intensity is going to get worse. The emissions are going to get greater. And unfortunately, it dwarfs just about everything else. Now, ARB will say, well, yeah, we understand that. We don't control wildfire emissions. Well, you know, ARB, along with all the natural resource agencies and state government, work for the governor. And the governor, I think, gets it and is putting a lot of effort in this arena. But until we get on top of the vegetative density, we're going to continue to see wildfires in the wrong direction, which just exacerbates our emissions problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Kevin Hamilton, Central California Asthma Collaborative and resident of the city of Fresno. I think we've adequately described our concerns with both agencies and the sort of slow march to compliance that we're seeing here. I think that the opportunities to advance these timelines need to be taken. There's plenty of them, and there's really nothing from a regulatory perspective stopping anyone from doing that. For the Air District, we have the opportunity to advance both the fireplace rule, the charbroiler rule, and other rules around stationary sources. We know that's true because we've heard designs of those programs. Why are we waiting? I see no reason to wait at all. More egregiously, though, to be honest with you, and longer lasting, is ARB's failure to comply with its own 2016 state SIP strategies. I look at page 37 of the document that you provided today, and I see these compliance dates, implementation dates for all these mobile sources that could help us, especially heavy-duty trucks. And I'll use the example of one that I dove a little deeper in, which is the opacity limit for heavy-duty vehicles. The action was taken this earlier this spring. Implementation is supposed to be happening in 2018, but I went to the webpage today for this project, and what I see is the same handout from previous years with the same limits on opacity. So this is what truckers are going to look and see what they should be doing, yet I'm still seeing exactly the same material that was there in previous years. So we need to keep up here, folks. This particular rule has tremendous power to clean up existing trucks. The existing rule is 40 and 50% opacity for black carbon coming out of a stack. I don't know who passed that in the first place, but that's just crazy talk. That's a really dirty engine. With this new rule, it's 5%. So you could almost breathe it. So when I look at that, and I look at the rest of this list of close to 12, I believe, actual items, all with dates into the 2020s for implementation, other than that one, I don't see how we're going to get to clean air in a timely fashion. And it looks like we won't see the full impacts of these until 2031. Too late. Too late. Move now.
Thank you.
My name is Gordon Knipp. I live in Bakersfield. I write a lot of comment letters on development projects in the Southern Valley for the Sierra Club. And from the perspective of strengthening the Air District standards, I'd like to make a couple of suggestions. The Air District has published guidance on how large a development project must be in order to contribute significantly to air pollution. There are small project analysis level, SPAL, S-P-A-L. For example, in 2012, the district determined that a single family housing project of less than 152 units would have insignificant criteria pollutant emissions, no mitigation required. In 2017, the Air District upped the threshold to 390 single-family units. No mitigation required now for projects more than 2.5 times the size of the earlier standards. In my opinion, a project of 390 single-family units should not get a free ride, should be mitigating for their air pollution impacts, not only project-specific, but also cumulatively. The Air District should be toughening standards, not weakening them. They should rethink their small project analysis level. One other thing. I've been commenting on a proposed 2 million square foot warehouse project on Highway 46 next to Interstate 5 in Kern County, close to several low-income communities, Lost Hills, Wasco. The Air District has an E-TRIP rule, Rule 9410, the Employee Trip Reduction Implementation Plan rule, designed to cut back on VMT and air pollution associated with employee trips to and from work in large projects, shuttles, vanpooling sort of thing. Because the applicability thresholds for E-TRIP are very high, I'm not sure that E-TRIP will apply to this warehouse project. In this case, it's an AB 617 and an environmental justice issue, as well as an air pollution issue. In my opinion, the Air District could lower air pollution by taking a good look at their E-TRIP rule, weaken the applicability thresholds, and strengthen the rule so that it applies to this and many other smaller projects. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Steve Montgomery, chair of the Kern Quay Chapter Sierra Club, and save for a sachet with the United States Navy and school, a lifelong resident of Kern County. Wood stoves are filthy. Even the EPA certified stoves, assuming proper operation, are 50 to 100 times dirtier than a Tier 0 unfiltered diesel truck in terms of particulates released per unit of heat. It should be common sense to everyone in the modern society with our level of health damage from air pollution should have zero tolerance for residents burning wood in their homes. For that reason, considering that an outright ban may be politically infeasible, the level of ambient air pollution allowed where no burn days are implemented should be 12 micrograms. That level is justifiable because that is the current health standard for PM2.5 annual average pollution levels. Also, this burning restriction level must be applied across the valley. Every neighborhood in the valley has residents with health issues affected by other neighbors burning fireplaces and wood stoves. The proposal to only tighten restrictions in so-called hotspot areas does not make sense. We are trying to improve public health, not just get monitors in hotspot areas into compliance. Also, nothing but a uniform regulation restricting wood burning across the entire valley floor can be effectively enforced. The only incentive money in this area should be spent on electric heat pumps for replacement of both wood heating units and natural gas units. This fits directly with state greenhouse gas reduction goals. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Connie Young, Fresno resident, retired RN, and volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby. Thank you, CARB members and EPA staff, for coming all the way to Fresno to hear our comments, concerns. In addition to the harmful effects of PM2.5 on human health, black carbon is second only to carbon dioxide as the main driver of climate change. Given our rising temperatures and increased wildfires, it makes no sense to allow any unnecessary black carbon emissions. While carbon dioxide remains in the atmosphere for a long time, black carbon stays there only a few weeks. Cutting PM2.5 emissions could reduce the rate of warming and some local effects relatively quickly, directly benefiting communities that reduce black carbon emissions. Therefore, I urge you to prohibit all non-essential wood burning during mandatory bans, including residential and commercial cooking, ag burning, use of fireplaces, and all wood stoves, including EPA certified, except when there's no other heat source. I'm also concerned about the way the dual residential wood burning curtailment threshold works in this valley. It allows residents in homes with natural gas to burn wood in an EPA certified device instead of using their natural gas furnace. If this plan meets the federal daily standard of 35 micrograms per cubic meter, then an EPA-certified wood stove can be used every single day, producing 3 times the carbon dioxide and 500 times the black carbon, PM25, emitted by a gas furnace. Promoting the use of even the cleanest EPA-certified wood stoves displaces the use of natural gas and encourages relatively greater black carbon and CO2 emissions. This PM25 plan offers a tremendous opportunity to improve our air quality and reduce one of the drivers of climate change. For the sake of our health and a stable climate, we simply must stop burning wood. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Janet Dietz-Kamay. I have asthma. Generally, in the summertime, without the forest fires, I can get out of the house in the morning before the ozone goes up. Of course, this year, I haven't been able to go out but a few days, and my voice is affected by even the small amount of time I was out getting into my car and getting a mask on to go to... the only time I can go anywhere is in the morning because of the ozone and the high PM2.5. Winter mornings are problems because of the PM2.5 generated by residential fireplaces. I live in Fresno City. I first learned that I had asthma when I ended up in the emergency room. I, in 5 days, progressed from being somewhat sick, thinking I had the flu, to having the beginnings of pneumonia. 5 days, I'm in the emergency room. That's what happens to those of us who have asthma. If we're exposed, then we get sick. And the others who have respiratory diseases are affected by this air. Now I stay inside annually about 80% of the time. In the fall and in the spring, there are some days when I can go outside and garden, work, and ride my bike. I love to ride my bike. I like to go like about 15 miles. And I rarely get to do that now. Because I can't work in my garden, I have to have the expense of hiring a gardener. I used to love to go out and work in my garden, but I have to hire someone to do something that I'm perfectly capable of doing if I can breathe in the air. I have air conditioning, but not all of the people in this valley are lucky enough to have air conditioning or be able to afford the air conditioning if they do have it. Those people are very much at risk and end up in the ER because they have to breathe the air that comes in the windows in the summer when they try to cool themselves. It is imperative that we reduce this PM2.5. I said at the beginning of these workshops that this is an urgent thing that has to be done as soon as possible. We can get the PM2.5 under control in the winter by banning burning. It's very simple, especially in the urban areas where we have natural gas to heat our homes. I also would like to see electrifying vehicles, getting a program going that will electrify and get interest in electric vehicles. Short-distance trucks in this area can be electrified. I think we can look at a lot of programs to get this program going, get the air clean as soon as possible for all of us because we are all affected by it. Those of us with asthma and respiratory diseases, we're the canary in the mine. We are the canaries in the mine. Thank you.
Claire Statham, Fresno resident. I am here to urge the Valley Air District to ban all residential fireplace burning. I guess there's starting to be a theme. It is ironic that we claim about breathing forest fire smoke in the summer, and then in the winter months are often subjected to the same harmful particulates because our air policies still allow wood burning. If those who burn fires could keep the smoke pollution within the confines of their homes, no one would object to their fires. However, that smoke would kill them, so their fires must be vented to the outdoors where my neighbors and I get to breathe it. On an individual basis, we cannot prevent our neighbors from burning. We rely on the Valley Air Board to safeguard our health. Americans long ago accepted that people cannot pollute public spaces with cigarette smoke. It is self-evident that people should not be able to pollute public spaces with fireplace smoke. Please set a date after which open hearth residential burning will no longer be allowed. To reduce smoke pollution in the interim, please take the following steps. Amend Rule 4901 to require that fireplaces as well as wood-burning stoves be permanently disabled or removed when a residence is sold. Ban fireplaces in all new construction. Stop providing incentives for switching to EPA-approved wood-burning devices. Adopt the 12 microgram threshold to trigger a no-burn day. Hire smoke inspectors to work between 5 and 10 at night and on weekends, which is when most of the burning takes place, but if you call in a complaint, you are generally met with an answering machine. Finally, develop a much more robust public education program. Your recent survey acknowledged that only 36% of those surveyed knew wood smoke is harmful. Invite the medical community, teachers, and coaches to forums on the hazards of particulates and ozone. Teach them to use the RAN app and other digital monitors. If you educate the public, they will embrace rather than resist a ban on wood burning. Please set a specific date to end all open hearth wood burning in residences. Thank you.
Daniel O'Connell, I'm executive director of the Central Valley Partnership and a scholar of the San Joaquin Valley, completing my doctoral dissertation on how the geography here, environmental and socioeconomic, was created over the last 70 years. I just want to start off by saying how much I appreciate the collaboration that I've seen over the last few years with the district, with CARB, EPA, and especially the advocacy groups and industry, in particular CVAC, which I appreciate greatly. Seeing people like Genevieve and Cesar and what happened recently in Arvin give me great hopes. Maybe it's the locals that'll solve this problem, not the bigger entities. So I just want to start off by saying geographies are constructed. They're created. This is the most productive region in the history of the world for food production. And yet we did it on the backs of the poor and on our lungs in this case. And that all happened in the last 50 years at great subsidy. We subsidized the petroleum industry and ag industry to create what we have now. And if we've done that, we can re-envision that these industries. And so I encourage you to focus on the industries, ag burning, oil and gas industry, the ammonia from dairies and fertilizers, heavy industry, heavy freight from trucks. Seek a comprehensive, integrated, and thorough solution, one linking and resolving the skewed socioeconomic structure of the region and the devastating environmental conditions we live in today. It's a rough place now. Everyone knows what's happened and happening in the valley, and yet look at this as an opportunity. I hear industry and their worry and concern about regulations, and I also think that the jobs are important. So there will be regulations here. I think we should be cautious of them, but I think we need to move fast as well. But I want to talk about the investments that can come from the creation of markets with natural capital and ecosystem services, which this region is extraordinarily rich in. So we have a cap and trade. We have a carbon market now. Looking at water, soil, farmland conservation in the same way and sending investments into this region in a comprehensive, integrated way is something that think of transforming the entire region in a beneficial way and retaining and acknowledging the successes we've had. Future generations are going to wonder why we were so slow when we have an extraordinary condition in front of us and we can change it right now. We've come a long way, and I just want to say thank you for the long discussions along lines that were adversarial, and I am positive that things are getting better. Let's move faster. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Catherine Garupa-White, and I'm the coordinator for Californians Against Fracking and Dangerous Drilling. Our coalition of over 200 members is for a just transition off of fossil fuels. And as you've heard tonight, with 80% of oil production happening in Kern County, the extraction of fossil fuels has severe consequences for the air quality in the San Joaquin Valley. I want to echo the thank yous for having a community accessible meeting in the evening with translation and food. I began this work 12 years ago, and it is progress to see all of you sitting around the table having dialogue about these critically important issues. I also want to thank the advocates for particularly laying out the contributions of the oil and gas sector to our problem. So while process is incredibly encouraging and a mark of progress, the proof is in the outcomes. So where we really need to focus is enforcement. Specifically, when it comes to the oil and gas sector, I would have three asks. The first being to provide immediate protections to those most impacted by these toxic extractive activities by implementing a health and safety buffer zone. The second ask would be to close existing loopholes in programs like the Emission Reduction Credit Program that has many dubious and outdated credits that are heavily used by the oil and gas industry to continue to increase emissions. Also, as highlighted by Cesar with CCEJ, and the exemptions for small producers are particularly troubling for people who are living fence line to these operations. And I want to be clear, when I say a buffer zone, we're asking the oil industry to move out, not that people be relocated from their homes. The third ask that I would have is ultimately what we need, a plan for a phase out of fossil fuels with priority for communities that are the most disproportionately impacted and the oil fields that have the highest carbon intensity, again, many of which happen to be in Kern County. Ultimately, to achieve clean air in the San Joaquin Valley, we need real reductions and not just computer models that pencil out at the end of the day. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is J.P. Cataviella. I'm with Dairy Cares, a coalition of dairy organizations here in California. I want to, first of all, congratulate the Air Resources Board and the San Joaquin Air District, especially for the number of public workshops that have been held on this. I've been following and participating in activities with the Air District for about 17 years now, and I don't believe any SIP has ever had this many public workshops, so I think there's been an unprecedented level of engagement. I want to echo the comments of Roger Isom, especially earlier, about the concerns we have. I want to also state that, like him, we're on board with making the progress that we're talking about in this, and we're doing that now and working forward. But we are concerned, especially with the dependence on the incentive program to replace 12,000 agricultural pieces of agricultural equipment in 5 years. We are concerned about the doability of that for all the reasons he stated. I won't repeat them. I want to point out that we've made some great progress with and thank the Air Resources Board and the GGRF for the ability to fund dairy digesters, a very healthy dairy digester program here in California that has not only allowed us to reduce emissions of methane and help with the climate change issue, but also create renewable natural gas that is being used to fuel cleaner burning transportation, replace diesel with cleaner renewable natural gas. I think with those kinds of solutions, we can see progress on multiple fronts. And then finally, in my very short amount of time left, I'd just like to briefly address the issue of ammonia. I want to thank the Air District and the Air Resources Board for working carefully on this issue to properly model ammonia and understand its role in air quality. I'll be finished in about 10 seconds. We know that that Rule 4570, which was passed by the Air District in 2006 and then strengthened in 2010, has reduced ammonia from dairies in this state by about 30%. But further reductions do not appear cost-effective according to this modeling. This kind of information is valuable, so it lets us focus on the things that we know will improve air quality, such as cleaner burning engines, reductions of methane, and the other environmental issues that we have, and not waste the very limited amount of funding that's available chasing problems that we can't fix. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Mo Kashmiri. I've never spoken at one of these meetings, so all the details you speak of kind of go over my head, to be perfectly honest, and I've learned a lot today. I'm here because I have to, you know, I look at the PM and I now wear a mask. Everyone tells me, Mo, you look so healthy, but I'm not healthy. The reality is I have a lot of health issues, and I have a very sensitive immune system, and I'm tired of looking like an idiot when I jog around the block with my mask on. It feels like we're in a third world country. I mean, I moved to Fresno 4 years ago. The idea that we've accepted apocalyptic system where we rate days that kids can go outside. I mean, this is not just an issue about health, which is important, but it's also draining our economy because we lose smart people. This happened when my friend Alegria left. This happened, and I'm considering leaving because I don't know if I can live in this environment, and the Valley needs people. You know, we need more folks coming to the Valley. We need to transform this economy and diversify it, and we can't do this with bad air. And I think 2024 is too damn long. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I feel like we deserve the right to clean air, period. And maybe I'm naive, but I don't think we should have to pay for the externalities of the costs of others that are making millions off the backs of our health. I don't think that's okay. Today is Zephaniah Benedict's 6th birthday. I meant to bring you a picture of him, but you know, he isn't here today, but his family is thinking of leaving the Valley specifically because of these health issues. This is not okay. I'm tired of waiting. I want to see action to clean the air now. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is John Haley, and I'm with Aera Energy, and I'd like to thank everyone in the room for working. Seems like we're starting to work a little bit more collaboratively to get to the end run instead of against everyone. So that's definitely been a step forward, and we all welcome that. I think everyone does. So, as Aera, we're proud of our track record of reducing emissions over time, and we've done that beyond what current regulations require. We are an oil and gas producer, if people aren't aware of that, mostly in Kern County and also in Fresno County in the San Joaquin Valley. And we're not resting on our laurels. We're continuing doing that today. With a couple of projects to highlight, we're working with the Aera District on experimental combustion technology for boilers to further reduce emissions from boilers. This is technology our engineers identified and brought to the district to pilot and see if we can further reduce emissions from our industry. We've announced one of the largest solar projects in California to lower our carbon footprint. So we're very proud of our past, and we look forward to the future. Just to address one thing is there seems to be a concern with future oil production. Currently, oil production in California is dropping. I think, in fact, we are no longer the third largest oil-producing state. We are now the fourth. We got passed by New Mexico this last year. I believe the ARB's own projections for the growth factor for the oil and gas industry shows a decline in the future. And that's not anything that warms our hearts as an industry, but we do believe that's accurate. Just to move forward on some of the stationary source measures, right now, we don't think that there's been enough analysis to say that a lot of these stationary source measures that are being listed are even feasible. And we have a lot of experience to bring to hold. We look forward to working with everyone and performing that complete analysis. And we hope that everyone commits their resources in order to complete a thorough evaluation of those technologies before we declare that they are feasible and cost effective. Thank you for your time.
Hello, good evening. My name is Angela Isos, and I am the policy advocate and community health worker for CCACs, which is the Central California Asthma Collaborative. The organization is nationally known Asthma Impact Model Program. I represent over 80 families, especially those who are adults who suffer from asthma. I'm speaking on behalf of them today. And also just a little bit of a background of me. I am a resident from Selma, California, and I am the daughter of two field farm workers as well as the sister of a truck driver who is my brother. So I have a little bit of agriculture running through my family, but that's just a little bit of a background of, you know, my family. I just want to echo with Nayameen, as especially with the advocates, really trying to put in the forefront of how important it is to have a very strong communication strategy through this PM 2.5 plan, especially putting more into education and more public outreach to our construction workers and all of our laborers who are outdoors daily. That to me during the wildfire season was a very big concern for me, having two parents being outside and my father suffering from congestive heart failure, still working out in the farms and being exposed to this, but not only during wildfire season, but also during high emissions of PM 2.5 that is still concerning to my background of just seeing my parents having to go out there every day, not having enough protection or education to know how to protect themselves. So I do urge that we definitely invest a lot for strong communication strategies and really trying to put place public health at the forefront in this plan, and incentivizing more renewable projects, as Tom France had emphasized, to be more implemented as soon as possible. I also want to just make sure that I emphasize that for many families, they don't really have a choice to, you know, to be able to protect their children when they're outside during these high emission days. And there's so much that these parents can do to protect them. And these families can't wait any longer to have cleaner air. You know, they fought through this program to have cleaner indoor air quality. Now we need to bring back that they have that opportunity to have clean air days. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Thomas Weiler. I work here. I'm the Fresno Chapter Director of Faith in the Valley. And I just want to start by thanking the Air District, thanking CARB, thanking industry, thanking advocates, because we are very optimistic and hopeful that clean and breathable air is in the future and in the near future, God willing. We work with faith communities in Kern County, Fresno County, Merced County, Stanislaus County, and San Joaquin County. Many of those faith communities and families are inside, and many of them are outside of the hotspots that were mentioned today. And all of our faith traditions teach us to love our neighbor, and they teach us to prioritize those who are most vulnerable. In this case, many of the families who have asthma or those who are working outside and those families with children, especially. We want to echo our partners at CVAC about the need to speed up and strengthen this plan. I think that's very loud and clear. And the other thing that I'd like to highlight is a need to balance the investment that's happening. There's a real opportunity and invitation to balance the investment that we're seeing in industry with also mitigation that's going to help vulnerable families, whether it's air filtration in schools and homes that are near industry, or electric school buses, or things of that nature. We see, I think, a tremendous opportunity to balance the investment that we're seeing in on the industry side with families who need it most, families who are most vulnerable in this moment. And with that, we look forward to seeing this get us towards clean air in the valley. Thank you very much.
Hello, thank you for all coming together tonight like this. It's really hopeful for our environment. My name is Ivanka Saunders. I'm a resident of Fresno for about 10 years, and I'm also a policy coordinator with Leadership Council for Justice and Accountability. I just wanted to reiterate two recommendations regarding reducing and evaluating ammonia reduction strategies. Ammonia, a toxic and odorous gas, is responsible for a third of our fine particle pollution, and dairies and fertilizers are their main culprits. Steps still need to be taken to protect communities from toxic gases and strategies to reduce ammonia that's been analyzed. Also, we still need to work harder for reducing the use of biomass incinerators. Industrial biomass incinerators are significant point sources of pollution, and they're almost always located in heavily overburdened disadvantaged communities. For instance, the Rio Bravo plant in South Fresno is the largest point source of pollution in Fresno County. and is located two blocks away from an elementary school. The use of these old facilities needs to be phased out. Through tonight, everything that I listened to, I still felt like whatever ends up in the laps of the EPA, it still needs to make sure that it's balancing this act of including area sources and point sources and not just mobile sources. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Mark Rose, and I'm the Sierra Nevada Field Representative for the National Parks Conservation Association. I'm also a Fresno resident. First, I just want to thank everyone for coming together and for all the progress that we've come through so far. Firstly, we at NPCA are seriously concerned with the ongoing delays that have occurred thus far in finalizing these multiple PM 2.5 plans and the effect that this delay has had and will have on the health of Central Valley residents and the well-being of national parks like Yosemite, Sequoia, and Kings Canyon, three of the dirtiest parks in the nation for air quality. In line with our mission to protect America's national parks, NPCA recently joined several other groups in sending a letter to EPA notifying them of our intent to commence a civil lawsuit against the EPA administrator for disregarding their non-discretionary duty under the Clean Air Act to issue a finding that California and specifically the Valley Air District has failed to submit plans for multiple PM 2.5 standards by the applicable deadlines. In addition to being nearly 2 years late in finalizing some of these plans, several of these plans relate to health standards that date back over 20 years to 1997, standards for which the Valley is the only region in the nation still listed as being in serious non-attainment. While we are optimistic that CARB and the district we'll work together to get these approved through their boards. We're really hoping for November. We felt it necessary to see that the existing laws in the Clean Air Act are enforced and final deadlines are established for submitting these plans. We are not alone in our concern. Nearly 2,000 NPCA members and supporters have given their support to this petition asking for a more robust Valley PM 2.5 plan to be finalized as soon as possible, because our national parks and people in the Central Valley deserve clean air, not more delays. Moving beyond delay, NPCA is also concerned that the district's proposed plan does not go far enough in reducing all sources of PM 2.5 in the Valley. This includes ag burning, residential wood burning, outdated biomass facilities, oil and gas production, char broilers, and ammonia and NOx emissions from dairy and agriculture. NPA staff is also worried about both the effectiveness and the legality of the so-called hotspot strategy, especially from the perspective of whether this strategy meets Clean Air Act best available or most stringent legal requirements for all sources and source categories across the Valley, not just sources in and around air monitors or in the hotspots. Thank you, and we look forward to working with you on these plans moving forward.
Good evening, Noelle Kramers of the California Farm Bureau Federation. I appreciate the opportunity to comment and appreciate the outreach and discussion on this plan as it has very real impacts on folks throughout the Valley. I want to reiterate the points that Roger Isom made earlier about how ambitious this plan is and the challenges that are present for implementation, and ask for support of everyone in this room to achieve the incentives that will be necessary to meet the goals in the plan. I also wanted to expand on the point that Steve Brink made earlier about wildfires and the impact those fires have on PM emissions in the Valley. This is more of a statewide issue, but one of the challenges is the lack of forest management. And prescribed burns can be very valuable in helping reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire. However, it is challenging to get the permits necessary for the prescribed burns due to the impact on air quality. Yet without them, we have a greater impact later on. So I think we just need to be able to recognize that there's a balance there and that more prescribed burning and more forest management could do a lot to improve the air quality. Thank you.
Good evening. I guess I'm the last one. Dolores Brajas-Weller from the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition. First of all, I want to say thank you to all of you for coming to Fresno, and especially to the advocates and partner organizations that belong to CVAC and all of the members of the public that are here tonight committed to clean air here in the Valley. And I know that we've been working on this for quite some time, And I feel that I don't need to go through all of the measures that the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition has been advocating for, because I think we've been very clear. We've been to CAR board hearings. We've been to the local board hearings. We've joined all of the workshops. And I think what we're all trying to do is identify what are the common threads here? What are, you know, issues that we're hearing, solutions that we're hearing from the public, from industry, from board members? And I think that we have heard many of those. Obviously, there's a lot of concern about residential wood burning. And so I think there's definitely something more we can do there. I want to definitely support all of the measures that were brought up in the advocate presentation. Also want to point out that on several occasions at the local board hearings, also Supervisor Worthley and I sat on a panel for KVPR where we talked about sustainable ag and that there are solutions that we could be incentivizing our growers to do the right thing, and we shouldn't be burning any material, especially open ag burning. We know that that is impacting our air regardless of what the modeling says. And we know that there are solutions available, there are resources available, and we really need the district to take the lead on bringing those resources together, streamlining that, making that a one-stop shop for our growers here in the San Joaquin Valley. We're not trying to put anyone out of business, and we are not anti-ag. We are supporting more funding for agriculture to do the right thing. And we have given very specific solutions in terms of that, and we look forward to seeing a complete plan with some of those issues that we know have been, as I said, common threads that you're hearing for over the last 2 years in all of these workshops. So we look forward to a finalized plan that we can comment on and that has some more of these issues that we want to see, and we appreciate everyone participating in this. Thank you.
Buenas tardes.
Good evening.
Mi nombre es Anabel Márquez.
My name is Anabel Márquez.
Y vengo de la ciudad de Shafter.
And I'm here from the city of Shafter.
Mi trabajo es trabajar con personas enfermas, incapacitadas.
And my job is to work with the people that are ill or that are disabled.
De cualquier edad.
Of any age.
Porque la enfermedad no respeta edades ni sexos.
Because illness does not respect sex, gender, or age.
Or religion.
Or religion.
La pregunta mía es, a quien me pueda contestar, ¿por qué le damos tanta vuelta a lo que ya sabemos?
My question is, and I don't know who could answer this question, but it's why are we going in circles about things that we already know?
Se nos piden muchos requisitos por vivir aquí en cualquier parte del mundo.
We have a lot of requirements that are asked of us just to live anywhere in the world.
Reducen el agua.
They reduced your water use.
Que está contaminada.
They tell us it's contaminated.
Nos mandan al DMV para que no, nuestros carros no echen humo.
They send us over to DMV to make sure that our cars are not emitting any kind of fumes.
Nos aconsejan que comamos comida orgánica.
They advise us to eat organic food.
Y todo lo que le quieran poner.
And anything else you want to add to that?
No es mucho lo que se avanza.
And there is not much that has been advanced or has been attained by this.
Porque niños, hombres, mujeres, niños están cada vez más enfermos.
Because each and every day there are more children and adults that are sicker each day.
Las chimeneas, olvídense, porque muchos pobres no tenemos ni chimenea.
And forget about this thing of the chimneys or the wood burning, because some of the poor people don't even have a chimney.
Vieran qué triste es ver a un niño que vaya a diálisis de 7, de 8 años.
If you knew how sad it is to see a 7-year-old child go to have dialysis.
O mirar que un niño se muere de cáncer de próstata, que eso es lo que es para adultos.
or to see a child dying of prostate cancer, which would should be an illness for adults.
Que les digan, ya no quiero seguir, ya estoy cansado.
And for that child to tell you, I don't want to go on, I'm so tired.
¿Qué le podemos decir nosotros que los cuidamos?
What can we tell that child, us of, those of us who take care of these children?
Si sabemos que las compañías más ricas son las que nos están contaminando.
If we know that these companies, the richest companies, they're the ones that are contributing to this contamination.
Nosotros somos culpables, sí.
We are also guilty, yes.
Pero es una minoría.
But that's a minority.
Y ustedes lo saben, lo
and
saben.
All of you know this.
Lo saben. Porque,
you know this.
Porque saben de negocios.
Because you know about business.
Saben de millonadas, billones.
You know what it takes, or you know to talk about billions and millions.
Nosotros nos preocupamos por comer.
We are just worried about
por
eating,
trabajar.
About working.
Y ahora nos tenemos que preocupar por respirar.
And now we have to worry about breathing.
¿Qué tenemos que hacer? ¿Comprar nuestro tanque de aire para andar en la calle con una máscara?
What,
es lo único que nos falta.
What do we have to do? Do we have to go out and buy a tank and have a mask on and carry it around?
Porque that's, todo se nos vende. Todo se nos vende. Díganme que no se vende.
Because everything is sold to us. Everything. Everything is sold to us. You can you tell me what isn't sold to me to us?
Por favor. No se esperen otros años más. ¿Cuánta gente va a morir?
So please don't wait any more years. How many more people need to die?
¿Saben cuánto nos cuesta un funeral?
Do you know how much a funeral costs?
¿Alguno se ha hecho una pregunta cuánto cuesta un funeral?
Have you ever asked that question, how much a funeral cost?
Más de $19,000.
Over $19,000.
Yo ya enterré a mi hijo.
Because I had to bury my son already.
Y si tienen tecnología para mandar un cohete a la luna.
And if the technology is there to send a rocket to the moon.
No pueden encontrar una solución para esta contaminación.
Can't they come up with a solution for all this pollution?
Yo sé que si saben o si no saben, investiguen por favor, porque es mucha la gente que se está muriendo.
I know that you do know, and if you don't, please research this because there are too many people that are dying.
Yo ya estoy vieja.
I'm an old person already.
Pero hay gente nueva atrás.
But there are young people behind me.
¿Ven que los niños no los dejan ni salir a recreo porque no pueden respirar?
And you see that children are not even allowed to go out to recess because they are not supposed to breathe that air.
¿De qué nos sirve pagar taxis? ¿De qué nos sirve pagar todo si somos presos en nuestra misma casa?
So what's the good of paying all these taxes if we pay for everything and we're still prisoners inside our own homes?
Por favor, piensen en el futuro.
Please think about the future.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you for actually traveling to Fresno. Fresno has such a reputation, but it is my home, and I grew up here. I really wasn't intending to speak, but I do feel that there's a population that has really been left out and has not been spoken about. That's the next generation. The birth rate, the infant mortality rate for Fresno County is 7.8 per 1,000 deaths. In the African-American community, it's actually 18.9. That really rivals some of the third world countries that we know about. Part of that is because of our exposure and the cumulative exposure to air pollutants, particularly PM2.5. So when I debated about whether or not I really wanted to say something, it is the voices of the next generation that required me to say something. It is important and imperative that we have some accountability in the plans that we're putting forth, but also some urgency. And I think what you're hearing from community members is the sense of urgency. People are dying. Infants are dying. Parents are not delivering healthy children because of the pollution in this valley. If you check the research that's going on now with preterm birth, you're fully aware that UCSF is sponsoring a program now to look at preterm birth in Fresno County. That is not because people just thought it was a great idea. It is because kids are dying. Parents are suffering, and our community cannot thrive unless we address this pollution in a serious way. So we're not just talking about the elderly, we're talking about the generations that are not yet born. And so for that reason, I'm asking that we think more seriously about balancing the amount of investment that is available to us, the technology that we have to leverage, and our desire to do the right thing. Many of us may not be here in 2025. We have no idea, but we do know that if we do the best that we can for the next generation, that we could die with some sense of accomplishment and some sense that we fulfilled a purpose, because we are here to do something that is productive. And so I would urge you to hear the voices of the community and the advocates and even your own heart that says there is more to do and we can do it and we should not limit ourselves because there is a bottom line that is the dollar. Because you really can't put a price on someone's life. And it is the saddest thing to understand that a mother has lost her child, not because of anything she didn't do, not because she wasn't doing the best that she could to produce a healthy child, but because her environment has not changed in the last 30, 40, 50 years. So I again urge you to please take that into consideration and remember the voices of those who have not yet been born. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Laura Rosenberger from Fresno, and I would suggest giving incentives for electric and solar stoves for the poor, because the reason why they're out there barbecuing is that they can't afford their PGE a lot of times. I've seen people's utilities were shut off, all they have is the barbecue grill. Incentives would really help those people. And also, organic fertilizer is more valuable to us gardeners than ashes. And I don't know where to find good quality fertilizer. It's not polluted. And actually, the farm making more restrictions for farm equipment will actually bring more productivity to the ag workers. They'll have better hearts and lungs and less sick days. And also, I measured about a 25% increase in PM2.5 pollution under the smoke of the Rio Bravo biomass incinerator. And also, I've measured almost about a 15% increase when I started sweeping dust on the side of the road in Malaga, and there's lots of dust on the side of the road. And there's been PM2.5 in that dust. I'm still trying to get an estimate of exactly how much. I have to do a few more measurements and a few more experiments and compare it to like an agricultural area and a residential area. The residential area was not high compared to the to Malaga, to the industrial area. And also, I noticed, I've heard there's been an infertility problem in Fresno. It's like there's one in 40 chance of getting pregnant for just like a young couple. And it's been worse than it was in the past. And maybe it's the toxic metals and all the, and just health pollutants and toxic metals combined. All right, thanks.
Hi, good evening. My name is Jesse Roseman from the Almond Board of California. And I look forward to reviewing the SIP, particularly the plan elements that deal with ag equipment and also the CMPs for conservation tillage and fallowing. The incentive programs of the district have been very successful, and we look forward to continuing this with the help of farmer funds. We've done significant research into how to research our own emissions, those of the almond industry, followed by extensive outreach and communication to our growers, and this is going to continue. Next up, we look to help working with the district to develop an incentive program for low dust equipment, and also appreciate the manufacturers that have really been working hard to develop new equipment that will fit these standards. We'll also continue to research the best methods of transforming our biomass into useful co-products, including whole orchard recycling, but also bioenergy and bio-based products. And I'd like to note here that while orchard recycling may look promising, it may not be appropriate for every situation or type of tree, so we'll continue to do that research and do outreach around the practices that show the most promise. Thanks.
excuse me, I'm Bob Hahn, owner of Buck Stove in Visalia, California. We've been picked on a little bit with our fireplaces. I've been in the industry since 1980, and the industry's made a lot of strides to clean up our products. The old days, some of our stoves were really gross polluters. The new stoves now are getting cleaner, and there are new standards in 2020 that'll make them down less than 2.5 grams or less. The Valley dealers, we're not selling the wood that we used to. Right now, we're doing at least 85% of everything we're selling now are clean natural gas burning products. If we get in a new construction, probably 98% of what we're putting in are natural gas. The wood is being eliminated. Part of the help is from the Valley with the change-out program. Just almost everything we're doing now is gas. We're also taking out, in the rural areas, we're taking out a lot of the gross polluters and putting clean burning wood stoves in there. People are going to burn the wood out in the country. They have access to wood, but we are going towards the gas. The other thing that's happening with the change-out program, we're helping a lot of low-income people who never had the chance to. They had the wood burning. They had no other choices. And now with the incentives that are being given by the Valley, they're all going to gas. It's coming. It's the wood is going away. With the help of everyone here, I'm not much of a public speaker, a little nervous, but the support of the staff, and we'd just like to thank everybody for the help, and let's clean it up. Thank you.
Thomas Menz, Fresno County. It seems to me that the same health consideration that forbids lighting a cigarette in a public meeting room should apply to smoking out an entire neighborhood by lighting up a bundle of these, because the smoke from this is more toxic, it's more carcinogenic, it's more mutagenic, and remains biologically reactive 40 times longer than the smoke from this. Now, this is bad, but this is worse. When you have it billowing out of your neighbor's fireplace, you can't keep it out of your own house. I live in a part of Fresno County that won't meet the 24-hour fine particulate standard, according to modeling performed by ARB. Not with this plan. Only a blanket ban on wood burning will give everybody their right to breathe clean air. Short of that, I urge a single 12-microgram curtailment threshold for all wood burning across the valley. Those EPA stoves, according to EPA, these certified wood stoves emit 500 times the PM2.5 as a gas furnace. And that kind of burning shouldn't be allowed every single day, as this plan will permit. The Clean Air Act requires of this plan the most stringent measures that have been implemented or achieved in practice for any source or source category anywhere in the United States. So why aren't those measures already adopted by other agencies included in this plan? For instance, why aren't the use of the old uncertified wood stoves, why aren't they completely banned like they're doing in Santa Rosa, California and up in Tacoma? That's an entire source category. You know, there are 23,000 of those in Fresno or in the valley. If they're all going at once, that's over a ton of PM2.5 an hour. So there are many other examples of what they're doing in other places, and I've provided them to your staff. But there are two other unique steps that I would like to see adopted here. One, require open hearth fireplaces be converted to gas or permanently disabled when a property is sold. And when a mandatory wood-burning ban is implemented and in place, it should apply to all wood burning, including cooking, both residential and commercial. No one should have to breathe secondhand smoke. Thank you.
Thank you.
Therese Manns, Fresno. What you're really hearing from the community, I mean, I know you guys are working hard, and you've been working on this for a long time. I don't know how long it's been since the last plan was denied, but we're breathing the same air. We are breathing the air from 1997. We are not meeting those minimum standards. We're inch of beer non-attainment. So you're hearing a community that's really frustrated because they're watching their husbands, their sons, their daughters, their parents dying. This is really, it's a pretty moral issue. And we really need to work on it, and we need to work on it fast. I'm only really speaking because Shiraz shut me up at the last PAW meeting I was at. The meeting wasn't for me. So just that. I mean, these EPA stoves, we shouldn't be funding them. Why are we funding 14% of the population that has a bad habit that's destroying the lives of all of us? Why would we fund that? Why are we going to spend $39,480 on that this year? It's inconceivable. I have more to say, but I can't think of it. But it's this whole thing, it's just really upsetting. I know you guys are working hard, but there are things that could be done. This could be done. This could have been done already. And I hope we can get the MSMs put into place because we are in severe noncompliance. That's all I have to say. Good night. Now you can go to sleep.
Thank you. I think we'll end our public comment. Ask the members of the board, particularly the San Joaquin Valley Board, maybe some comments on what you've heard. I think the goal of this conversation is to ask the question, how close are we to close and closing? You know, really at this point in time, I very much applaud the posting this week, but where do you see it going from here, from your perspective, from maybe the district's perspective? And I'd like to hear from CARB.
Just a few thoughts I wanted to share. First, I want to thank everybody for the comments. I think it's really important to clarify first a couple of things, and maybe then offer thoughts on what you're asking about, Senator Flores. I think, as was mentioned before, I think Genevieve had a slide about expeditious as possible, and that's really the goal. So all of the things that we're going to be evaluating as far as putting them into the plan is really with that goal in mind. And there was a time, you know, when we were talking about these plans and standards, we were talking about well beyond 2024, 25. Sharpened our pencils, came up with a strategy that now hopefully demonstrates that we'll be able to meet the standards by 2024 and 2025 with no extension. So we actually have time under the Clean Air Act to even go beyond those dates, and we're not asking for those with this. I think with the open burning issue, with as far as ag open burning, you know, that's one area that's come up a couple of times during the meeting. You know, we agree, actually, that we need to find ways to eliminate, reduce open burning. Ag agrees. In fact, they're working closely with us to look at a number of different techniques. Mr. Franz mentioned some of the same things that we're actually looking at right now. And so one of the big commitments that I'm not sure is very clear, you know, in the earlier presentation, is a commitment to work on reducing and hopefully eliminating ag open burning and really take advantage of some of the new techniques and the momentum that came out of our summit and some of the other ideas that are out there to really make a difference there. Frankly, under state law, and by the way, the Valley here is the only area in the state that actually has prohibitions on ag burning. Nowhere else in the state has those prohibitions. Frankly, under state law, if we don't have alternatives to open burning, we're technically not even allowed to phase that out. And what we've been doing, what our board has committed to doing, is to not roll back. We actually have the prohibitions in place, to not roll those back, which technically under state law we'd have to do. It's actually, rather than doing that, focus on finding alternatives. And so again, I wanted to clarify that that is the commitment and that is something that's going to be in the plan and that you're going to hopefully see some solutions in place in the near future. On residential wood burning and the valley-wide comments that have come in, I wanted to be very clear about this. We have a very stringent residential wood burning rule in place today. We actually have a threshold of 20 micrograms that's below the 24-hour level of 35 micrograms. But even beyond that, what we talked about doing is in areas that have the most difficulty with attainment is going down even further, going down to 12 micrograms. And it's something that's actually been recommended by a number of members in the community. We've taken that comment to heart, And this board has actually already directed staff to look at lowering that threshold in the areas of the valley where we have the hardest challenge in attaining to that level. And we're continuing to refine that strategy as we take public comment and work on the plan. That's something that's an ongoing process that we're taking a look at. The fact of the matter is that most of the valley actually reaches attainment with those standards well before and well beyond the standards that we're talking about. In the North Valley, for example, those levels are achieved below the 35 and the 12 well before the dates that we're talking about here. And so when it comes down to limited resources, and this is what it comes down to, where you invest your dollars and how you do that in a way where you benefit the parts of the valley that have the hardest time, how do we do that collectively in a way that really gets to where we continue to have the biggest issues as we move forward with this plan? If money was no object, we could do all of this stuff, right? We could replace every single device, ban every single operation, just pay ag to just not do anything and not produce, not move any product because we wouldn't need to have product to move. The reality of the situation, though, is that it is very expensive, billions and billions of dollars, to reduce these emissions over time. And what we're trying to do with a hotspot strategy is for those remaining areas that have the biggest challenge is really focus those investments in those areas. And I would challenge anybody here to talk to a restaurant and tell them that you're going to not be allowed to cook on, well, most of the winter to see if that restaurant still survives. And so there are hundreds of restaurants just in Fresno and Kern alone that would be subject to that regulation that we've talked about for under-fire charbroilers. And so we as a public agency do have to understand how can we push technology in a way that we can partner with in areas that nobody has ever done before. There isn't one area in the world, actually, that's put in actual regulations on under-fire charbroilers at commercial operations. So we're actually pushing the envelope on those measures, and we're pushing them in areas that, again, have the most difficult air quality challenge. Now, overall, I'm sorry, if I just
Hi,
finished my...
excuse me.
Yeah.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi. Can... Let's... Everybody had their time, so let's try
and
to
I'd,
keep
And
that.
I'd be happy to have that Thank you. Additional conversation with you. I just want All to right. make sure I get through this here first.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to say with commercial charbroiling is there are two areas of the state of the valley that have the most difficult challenge, which are Fresno and Kern counties. We need to spend actually at least $50 million by our estimates just for a couple of hundred restaurants to help them comply with a new regulation in that area. We don't even have that funding. So we need help from the state. We need help from anywhere we can get it to help support that measure. Now, on the ISR and E-TRIP that was brought up, our indirect source review, the E-TRIP measure, I think Mr. Nip had brought that comment up. I'm glad he brought them up because we're the only area, again, that actually has a rule on employer trip reduction, the only area that has a rule on indirect source review for developers. There's no other part of the state, in fact, South Coast, right now struggling to develop a rule for those very same sources. And so I think it's really important as we talk about these types of things that we recognize the fact that developers in this area have to deal with requirements that nobody else in the state has to deal with. And we're going to keep sharpening our pencils and finding ways to reduce emissions in those categories. But it's not like there hasn't been work done to date on those very same issues that were brought up before. On electric vehicles, there was a lot of suggestions on working on those. We're very, very active in that area, partnering with CARB. It's a huge priority for this Valley Air District to work on deploying electric vehicles in this region. In fact, just last week, we opened up a portal that allows anybody in the Valley to directly apply into our program and receive at least or about $10,000 towards the purchase of a new electric or a new or used electric vehicle. And you get that level of funding if you're a low-income family and you're in a disadvantaged community. It's nowhere else in the state's doing this. It's a very exciting program. It's one example of the type of thing that this agency and this board has been able to put into place to help with that very same issue that was brought up. And again, just want to wrap up on, just as far as my observations on public education, clearly we can do more. It's clear that many in this audience and throughout the Valley aren't aware, for example, about the portal that I just mentioned, efforts to look for technology for ag burning, residential wood burning and things that we need to do in that area, the health impacts that are associated with residential wood burning. Last year, our board had a very robust conversation about this and how we continue to build those issues into our messaging. We have work to do. There's no doubt about that. But I wanted to make sure on those specific issues that were brought up, there was some response in terms of what has happened and where we want to continue to focus that effort. Now, as far as where we go from here, we do want to post a draft of this plan, and I'm confident that if your issues aren't directly addressed, and hopefully affirmatively with some of your suggestions, that at least what you find there is some opportunity to build on what we have in the plan. On every single issue that was raised, and I've taken very detailed notes of some of the areas that I'm going to go back and sort of double check based on the input today, we have strategies in the plan. Lawn and garden was brought up. We didn't talk about that today. Deployment of commercial lawn and garden equipment that's electric. It's an idea that's come up in the public process. There's technologies. We want to promote those. In fact, for the member of the audience who talked about mowing the lawn, maybe with an electric lawnmower, we have a program for that as well. But if not, most of the particulates probably breathing when you're out there mowing the lawn are probably coming from the engine that's right in front of you as you're pushing the lawnmower for that particular moment. So we have programs that are trying to deploy these new technologies, not just for residential lawnmowers, but also for commercial. We have recommendations for cities and counties on how to deal with leaf blowers and other issues like that. There's been a lot of comments during this process. We've incorporated a lot of those suggestions into the plan. And obviously, during the 15 minutes that we had to talk about the plan, it's very difficult to get across all of these different issues that are being addressed. But I encourage all of you to read that plan when it comes out, and hopefully you find something you can work with there, and then again, come back to us with any other recommendations that you have. So I think what I'm hoping to see here, to answer your question directly, is a robust conversation. Once we open the comment period on that plan that we post this week, what I'm hoping to be able to come back to our board with is a recommendation for this plan that incorporates all of those suggestions. What I'm hoping from CARB is a continued commitment that I've seen from them to really flesh out the mobile measures. You've heard comments as well about, you know, where we need to focus some of those efforts. The money is a huge deal. How we explain how we're going to deal with, you know, with the truck issues, the opacity, the inspection and maintenance. These are all very big and very aggressive programs. I don't know if anybody here really follows the history of the smog check program. Everybody here is used to getting their cars smogged, right? It took time to put those programs in place. We're talking about having a program like that for trucks in like 4 or 5 years, what took, you know, decades in the making here with light-duty vehicles. There's a very, very aggressive set of measures in this plan that are going to take a lot of work and cooperation, you know, from everybody, from the businesses, from the advocates, from the residents to put together. And I think if we're able to do that, if we can get CARB to basically help take their measures to the finish line, and I can bring something to our board that reflects all of this public input, that we'd be able to adopt something hopefully here in the next several months. And I would just encourage you to look at the plan, because I think a lot of these questions that were raised tonight are going to be addressed, at least in some way in the plan. I don't think everybody will be happy with everything in the plan, but hopefully you have something to work with, and we'll be looking for your input as we post that.
Great. And I think I'm going to ask CARB to maybe take us through what happens from a CARB perspective in terms of implementation. I would like to say one thing before you do that, and I think here's where we always, the wheels come off, and that is you're posting something Friday. CARB is going to lay out, I think, in some sort of thought process about when that gets to CARB and then what, how we follow it and how we track it and how we kind of stay in this, if you will, maybe on a yearly or something of that sort. But I guess my question to the district, and it's rare that we're board members, and Alex is kind of, you know, sometimes the representative, but I guess I have a question sitting from this board's perspective, and that is, how much time in your, you say there may be some outstanding issues when you post Friday, how much time do the advocates have to really sit down and look at those outstanding items from char broiling to wood burning to, I mean, what true process is there in this comment period that doesn't get everyone to come to the board again and say almost but not quite, so we end up doing what we did last December, which was kind of pull it off the agenda, have more discussions, have CARB involved. We're now at the finish line, so how do we not trip, you know, as we're just kind of about to cross it, I guess, is my, from your perspective.
That's a great analogy on that. yeah. So first of all, when we post a plan, you know, we'd like to have a 30-day comment period, which for those that don't want to come in and actually meet with us to go over the plan in more detail, which I would encourage you to do. If you want to have that level of interaction, you set up a meeting with us, and you come in, and we'll go over whatever area of interest you have. But there would be a 30-day comment period, and at that point, we would just assess where we are. I think a situation where we feel like we have responses to those comments and are able to incorporate those in a meaningful way in the plan, that we would then post subsequent to that in time for a November, say, adoption, which would be sometime in October. So if we post here end of August, we got September, then we have weeks in October to turn that around and have whatever interaction we need to have to respond. That would happen in a situation where we'd be able to respond to whatever issues come up. Now, if there are significant issues that are coming in that require further time and require further public engagement and process, then we'll be back into the public engagement mode. And that's been something that we've been going through for a couple of years. And we've kept the board apprised of that process. I think CARB has staff have kept their board apprised. And we'll continue to work through the issues. You know, I think the reality is that we don't ever get 100% approval on a plan. What we hope to get is as much common ground found in this plan, where we have enough to work with, and we have as much overlap with everybody's interests that provide the foundation for all to then use the plan as the spring to sort of move forward with all of these different strategies. There were comments raised about moving forward with these measures. We want to move forward on these measures, and we think we're getting close now with all the public process that we've had to getting around some ideas here that we want to move forward with. So I would just encourage that you don't have to wait for the 30 days to be over. You can just jump into the review right away and come meet with us during those 30 days, or you can wait till the very end and give us a comment letter, and that's fine too. However you feel like commenting is all welcome. We'd have to evaluate after we get those comments to see where we stand and hopefully find the common ground that we're looking for to be able to take a plan to our board. Okay, that makes sense. I'd be happy to, I don't know if the board members want to weigh in on that as well from their perspective, but that's just from a staff perspective.
Okay, and maybe from the advocate's perspective, given it's Friday, when do you expect to be in Smear's office for this discussion?
Requesting the meeting right now for next week after.
Okay. So I think the process has been laid out, and I think it's incumbent on folks coming to the table with the outstanding issues that were laid out here, which I count as three or four big issues, but it seems like we should be working towards that. Maybe a comment from what you just heard, because I'd like to hear it publicly.
Sure. Well, I'd also like to thank the community members who showed up today and gave their comments. They're really moving. I was taking notes through the whole presentation, and we did hear move faster was the most repeated phrase of the night, followed by more stringent regulations on fireplaces, and then also more stringent regulations or changing of incentive structures on ag burning. And then there are some issues with the hotspot strategy. So those, I tallied up each comment, seemed to come out top. So these are issues CVAC has been raising with the district and with CARB for the past 2 years now. So they are nothing new, and I don't think that they warrant another two-year process to talk about them. You know, you've heard from us what we need in the plan. And so I hope the district's able to commit to do more. I do appreciate what you say about committing to do more on ag burning. I think that's exciting. I'd love to see that in the plan. But I don't want this back and forth that's been happening for 2 years to continue for another 2 years. We need a plan in place, and we need emission reductions now.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Back to the original question, I think, to CARB, which is how do we track this implementation? What you've heard thus far, and I would ask for a data fight about mobile and stationary, but we would be here for hours. So, but right now, I'd just like to maybe, Kurt, get your thoughts on this process.
Absolutely. And I'm going to build off your metaphor of tripping right before we've crossed the finish line, because from CARB staff's perspective, we are right at the finish line. It took us perhaps two years longer than we wanted it to and than it should have, but we are right there. Part of the reason you heard Genevieve Gale in the start of her comments talking about the strengths of this plan. This is, I've been working on San Joaquin Valley planning since 2000. The basis that we've got in the plan right now that we're expecting to see, we've seen a lot of the work behind it, but we'll see all of the written words at the end of this week, is the strongest basis for a PM plan, for an ozone plan that I've seen coming out of San Joaquin Valley. So we are right at that finish line. To get over the finish line without tripping, we've got to hit some marks going forward, and I think we have the time to do that and wrap this up by the end of the year. The first, as we talked about, as Michael Benjamin talked about in his presentation, is that we need to wrap up the mobile source strategy and get that in terms of a formal commitment by CARB as to the part that it's going to do to secure clean air in the valley. To do that, we released a draft of the strategy yesterday. And we are prepared to release a formal draft of the proposed strategy to bring to you and the rest of the CARB board on the 21st of September. A critical conversation that has to take place between now and then, and actually after that, is the one that Roger Eisen was talking about. A lot of that strategy relies on the availability of incentive funds. We laid the foundation for the measures in that plan when the CARB board adopted the regulatory basis a year ago. And a lot of what is now in this part that we released, we'll release on the 21st and bring to you, is the acceleration of that strategy to meet the deadlines in the San Joaquin Valley, and key to that is the availability of the incentives. So I think we've got the technical part nailed down, but we have to continue the conversation of developing the strategy to get the incentives for the mobile part. Now turning to the districts piece. As I said, I think the bones of the structure and a lot of the meat are all there. We're really, really close. We heard a couple of things through the course of this conversation. Genevieve Gale just talked about them, and Samir was talking about them as well. Once the plan is released, we'll continue our conversation in collaboration with the district staff about some things that we're seeing. For example, we've heard a number of comments, and I'm sure the district staff would agree, the success of a hotspots residential wind combustion rule is based on your ability to enforce and outreach. And so we want to understand more about what the district staff are thinking about how that gets implemented, so that as we do our evaluation and eventually report back to you as to whether the program meets the requirements of the Act and the issues of most stringent measures, for example, that we'll have that. And I think that's a conversation we can close in the 30-day comment period that the district is talking about. And similarly, good to hear that you're looking at issues related to open burning. That's a really complex problem. We'll be able to get some. I'm good to hear that in this version of the plan, but we'll also need to continue that conversation even after we act on the plan. So I think for the number of things that were identified here, we have the time for ARB staff to be working with the district staff and understanding the details of the measures so that we can bring a review back to you after the local district acts, hopefully in the November timeframe. We can bring a review of that local element in December, wrap this thing up, and get it into the EPA. I'm not going to promise my staff will work on Christmas, but as soon as this thing is wrapped up, we'll get this thing out and get it to EPA.
Okay, any comments? Yes.
I'd like to note, I threw a blue folder in the laps of all of those sitting in front, and I know you probably have not had time to look at that, mm-hmm. but it is a letter asking for three things, for clean air now, for a plan that addresses all sources of pollution, and better communications around public health and how to protect yourself. And that letter was signed by almost 800 people in the San Joaquin Valley, and that number's rising. And in addition, there's about 15 pages of individual comments from people explaining why they signed the petition. And so those are from people who couldn't be here today from all across the valley. And so if you're looking for additional public comment, you'll find it in the blue folder. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Before we close, I just want to say a couple of things. One, I definitely want to be involved in the close of this, if possible, and then working with your board as well. I know the board's been moving expeditiously. Money still is a big issue. Don't think that we missed the billions and billions and billions comment. So we heard that pretty loud and clear. I think the issue simply is getting this plan to a point, and I think as Kurt said, putting the meat on the bones when you post on Friday and see how far we can get on that. I do appreciate everyone showing up. I think the outstanding issues, as I've heard, are still outstanding. So I don't want to say that the task is going to be that easy in these next 30 days, but I think if everyone gets to work, we're just about there, and let's see if we can get some closure on this. And I want to thank everyone for coming tonight, and we will hopefully make this an annual event where boards can get together. I think it would be helpful. So I do appreciate it. So thank you, everyone, for attending.